evening, everyone, and welcome to Garage Hammer, episode 23, with our special guests, Brian Steele and Aaron Schmidt. On tonight's episode, Tomb Kings, resin, painting, modeling, converting, facing, and apparently putting people in check. So, without any further ado, here are your hosts, David Whitetech and Christopher Barnett!
Welcome, welcome, welcome to lovely episode 23 of Garage Hammer. I'm Christopher Barnett, and that's right, woo-ha! I got you all in check.
He has us all in check, ladies and gentlemen.
All of you. I have you all in check. As of this morning, I have you all in check. So, deal with that.
You didn't realize when you downloaded this, but by downloading episode 23, put yourself in check.
That's right.
You're in check. I'm in check. Skip Stevenson's in check.
I'm not in check because I got you all.
Tor Johnson's in check. 10 o'clock. Time to get put in check.
Time to be in check.
Hey, folks, it's Dave and Chris, and we are here with episode 23, one episode away from our big one-year anniversary show.
Dun, dun, dun!
Which promises to be episode 24.
Mathematically, you're correct.
Yes. Well, I'm not promising anything because I promise a long show and it'll be stupid long. If I promise a short show, I will be a liar head.
I think the only thing we can guarantee is generally a promise for a long show.
we could promise adequacy.
It's adequate.
Thank you. Thank you. So why don't you let everyone know about who our sponsors are, Christopher?
Sounds like a plan. As always, we need to take a minute to thank our sponsors. Unique Gifts and Games in Grays Lake, Illinois. Unseen Lurker, the tabletop wargaming magazine. Game Preserve Stores located throughout Indiana. And Urza's Den, custom painting and sculpting. You can find links and information for all of our sponsors, both in the show notes and also on our website, garagehammer.net.
Yes, yes, yes. And this episode, our shout-out sponsor, three episodes in a row. Our shout-out sponsor is Robert Ruffner,
the laser-shooting lawyer from Maine.
The cranky lawyer from Maine.
Lawyertron.
Yes. So he has a nice shout out here. However, we are going to have it read by our good friend Brian Steele once he's here in the studio. So we will get to that, and then I'll probably edit it in right here.
This shout out, scratch that, grudge out, is to the Swiss dictator. There is only one thing we dwarves of Maine. Dwarves of Maine? Oh, he lives in Maine. All right. Let's continue with the regular scheduled shout-out. As I was saying, there is only one thing we dwarfs of Maine hate more than elves, and that is dark elves. And, oh, there are only two things that we hate more than elves, and that's dark elves and, well, the Yankees, but, and everyone else. Nope. Okay, okay. There are only three things that, oh, and Christopher. Amongst the things we hate more than elves are Drew Shy, the Yankees, and Christopher Barnett. But of all is hatred so deep for something, the mere existence of which is such an affront to every dwarf under every mountain, that we do not speak of it, which I will now speak of, even though it is so unspeakable. All right, so it's really more unspeakable-ish, more of a guideline than a rule, a suggestion. Where was I? Oh, hatred, right. Of course, I speak of our hatred and haberdashery. Oh, hatred of haberdashery. Hats? Really? Hats? That's right, hats. And the curly-bearded, horn-worshipping, coffee-drinking? Chaos-loving, hobgoblin-dating, sneaky-dirty, git-consorting, bull-centaur, shoveling, dowie-czar who wear them. So yes, I'll accept your challenge to a, though it is an insult to all dwarves when you say it, grudge match. I promise that when we are through, it will be clear that your so-called army and its hats are better suited for the soft pastels and milk juleps of Churchill Downs than the field of battle. Oh, and your hats are ugly. So there, from the cranky lawyer of Maine.
Edit. Remix. There we go.
That was awesome.
I'm dying. That's not a good pain.
You're dying because you're in check, Dave.
I'm not. You can't put me in check.
I put you in check.
My Uzi weighs a ton.
My lethal weapon's my mind.
You keep saying that. All right.
Harrison, you can't put me in check until you're older.
Yes, Harrison.
That's, is that
hush, boy.
Is that ageism?
I think so.
Yeah.
By the way,
quite,
folks,
because you're young,
the Phoenix Prince will be on later because he's going to be talking about his game, which actually he's going to be starting up his campaign game in about an hour with Taz when she gets here.
That's right. We're actually going to be having a game as
there
we record.
There'll be a game being played across on the other end of the crypt while we record, and then when they're done, they'll come in and he's going to talk a little. Well, he's going to talk about his game, yep. And today his topic is going to be basically. He's played two games now with his Skaven, mm-hmm. and he had one game where Chris Yu asked him to play his High Elves, and Chris would play his Skaven.
Right.
So that he could, Chris could kind of pick apart his weaknesses, you know, for Adepticon. But Harrison learned a heck of a lot doing that, so he wanted to talk a little bit about that. So that's going
to
be later in the show.
Good. I'm looking
forward
to
it. For those who have missed the. Oh, and of course, because the Phoenix Prince is going to be on. And many people have been requesting it. You know who introduces the new Phoenix Prince segment now?
Dirk Daring? Dexter Gordon?
No.
Buck Rogers.
That would be my good friend, the master engineer. So he will be on to introduce
his,
the segment later.
And his sidekick, Snooki?
No, Snorri. Snorri, you never listen to the show. Snorri doesn't work with the master engineer anymore. He is now, he's like, working with some of the manlings.
Snooki's a contractor, isn't he?
No. Snooki's that chick on...
We're going to get Jersey Shore on our show?
I sure as hell hope not. I don't ever want to get Jersey Shore. That's just like...
How about the Venture Brothers? Can we get...
That's okay.
Can we get Dr. Orpheus?
I'd rather get the guy who does all the music for...
Freaking Clint Thurlwell?
Yeah, J.G. Thurlwell, Clint Ruin.
This Garage Hammer show is fantastic.
And yeah, there we go. 5 minutes into the show, we're gonna do some. All right, news and rumors. Let's just move along. So, news and rumors is still pretty much the same. I was looking on their website today. They still haven't put out an Orcs and Goblins FAQ, which I was kind of not that it needs it really bad, but there's a few questions, and I just keep checking every day.
The one I would still really like to see resolution for is: can we or can we not assume that when you roll a one for the
mushroom?
Yeah, what's it called? It's the night goblin shaman.
Yeah, when he eats the mushroom on a one, is it automatically poisoned?
We know he takes a wound on a 4+, but the question is the spell negated? Does he break concentration?
Or is it only
always
negated if it's poisonous?
Right.
And yeah, that's a good question.
It was unclear to me. And what was I know
the
there
other
was
one? The other one is where it goes and
For the big wah, whether or not goblins count.
Yeah, whether it's just orcs.
Yeah.
Funny thing is, I mean, it can go either way because I know you guys make a good case of saying it says orcs before it. I was thinking that it literally says all units. It could go either way.
Right now, rules as written, I think that it's a little more clear it's all units. The mm-hmm. one that bothers me is it's
beforehand.
There's no easy way to intuit what they mean with the Night Goblin. That's the one that bothers me because
right.
there is no read as written. It's poorly written.
Well, you know, you got the one part that's kind of in, they got a little italics and then not italics and then this. Because even Helan read it and he said, rules is written. I remember listening to the last episode of Helan Hammer. He says, rules is written. It says all units. But right before.
Oh, for the orcs. For the orcs, yeah. I think rules is written. It's clear. But for the Night Goblin, I think rules
right.
is written. What it says is. You fail if you roll a one.
I think if you roll a one, it automatically breaks as well.
If we're going to put our English professor's hats on here, I think that is the way that the sentence is written.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's what they intended, and I'd rather them clarify it.
Of course, now that I've said that I think it means all units for the big wah, they're going to go and say, no, we just meant orcs.
If there's one thing that I can count on is whatever I make a decision based on what I think is logical, Games Workshop says, F your logic. We're talking fantasy.
But, I will say, I know we've had a couple of games, you know, Luke's been playing Orcs and Goblins.
Yep.
And other people are having some games. It seems like a pretty balanced army. I still think that Arachnarok becomes a liability. I'm not seeing people having a lot of success with
it. We played,
at least not around here.
We played an interesting just roll the dice scenario. It was the Necro Sphinx, I believe it was, versus the Arachnarok. And my prediction was, oh, gosh, I think the Arachnarok is going to get smashed. But then it was pointed out to me that, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the Necro Sphinx that has Killing Blow, Heroic Killing Blow?
Yes.
It was pointed out to me that that's only one die. It's the whole thing doesn't have Heroic Killing Blow.
It just
blow.
Has the one attack.
And with that in mind, with the poisonous attacks from the Arachnarok, it kind of turned around the other
but
way.
But the Arachnarok only gets one poisoned attack as well.
I think they're all poisoned, but one of them is that Venomous Surge.
Oh,
Let me correct that. It's all from the Arachnarok, but then there are 8 attacks from the goblins who don't have poison attacks
right.
at all.
Right. Yeah, they get a lot of extra attacks. But that thing's toughness 8. You got to roll a lot of 6s to wound that thing.
That's true. But, so, I mean, remember that poisoned attacks is also rolls on 6s to hit, which means you skip that roll to toughness 2. So you're skipping a filter. If you roll 6s to hit,
oh, that's
now
true.
Those all get through. You put that's those true. Dice aside, and the rest of the dice you need 6s to wound.
No, so that's true.
Potentially, it's reducing.
I mean, it's all theory hammer right now, anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But
well, let's get into the Tomb Kings a little bit. We're talking about it. The important thing here from the news and rumors is that book is available at stores to preview.
Yeah,
preview.
Yeah,
preview.
I was actually thinking we might talk a little bit about that later in the show once Brian and them show up, just to kind of just sit around and chit chat. And
that's fine. Hopefully, they've seen it.
Yeah, and if not, I mean, Christopher and I literally sat there in the store. We must have been looking at that book. I looked at it the day I was there for about 2 hours.
Just I was delighted. I was running up and down the store screaming like a little girl.
I know. I was there one day by myself, and I was literally just sitting there reading it and trying to memorize it because they're like, it's not for sale. You can't be, you know, taking notes and doing all that crap. And I'm like, I understand. I'm just reading it. But I was like trying to memorize as much as I could.
Yeah,
and then you were there, and I'm watching you. We showed up on Monday, and you're holding the book, and you're like, "This is cool." And I'm like, "You're reading something like Chris? What do you think of this?" You just look up at me with like wide eyed, like a little kid at Christmas. You're like, "Oh, this is awesome."
What's so nice, because from what they've done is that they've taken an army that's close to the bottom, if not at the bottom, and they've brought it right back up. I'm not saying it's going to be at the top. I don't think it will be, but
speaking
I think it's going to be in a strong top middle.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of being at the bottom, let's if we were going to, I don't know, rank all the armies.
Yeah.
Well, we have our contest going on still, folks.
Yep.
The Game Preserve 50 contest has become the Game Preserve Battalion contest right now.
Pretty exciting stuff.
All you got to do is go to garagehammer.net, sign up to the forums. It's free. You have to introduce yourself first, folks, if you're a new member.
Right on.
When you go onto the forums, it says introductions. Introduce yourself. And in big, bold letters, it says you must post here first. It's like a spam filter type thing we're doing.
Right.
But once you do that, you can go to the contest, and all you do is we got a list of the 17 armies. That's the 15 GW1s plus Dogs of War and Tomb
Chaos
Kings.
Dwarves, yeah.
I mean, Chaos Dwarves. Mm-hmm. Rank them 1 through 17, best to worst, in your opinion, using the old Tomb King book, which I went and actually changed that. When I listed it, I put that next to Tomb Kings.
No, fair enough.
A couple of people went in and said, oh, I think the new book, I've seen it, and I think they're going to be here. And I'm like, don't judge them. It's too early. So keep it with the old book. I guess it's awkward timing on our contest, but
well, considering that so many different army books are coming out at the same time or close to the same time,
right.
It's going to skew it a little bit. So you're just going to have to draw a line in the sand and say from here to here.
But folks, here's the deal: we got a couple of extra special announcements going with this contest. First of all, just enter the contest, because we're going to take the total number of entries and get a random number. You know, if we have 100 entries, which right now we're at like 90. Which is fantastic. Thanks, guys. That's cool to see new people signing up and coming on. But if we get 100 entries, then we'll just randomly get a number between 1 and 100, and that person is going to win a brand
spanking new. That's what percentile dice were invented for.
Exactly. We'll win a brand spanking new battalion of their choice from GW.
Yep.
And I suppose it could be a battle force as well.
Well,
I mean, I prefer that they're the same price.
Well,
they're plastic.
Well,
but
let's make sure that Games Preserve is acquiescent to it.
Right. Well, I mean, before Carlos said that if you wanted 40K stuff, he didn't care.
Oh, that's what a Battle Force is?
Yeah, Battle Force is the 40K battalion.
Oh, whatever.
But we also have some interesting information. When Brian Steele shows up, he is bringing something special, he told us, to add to the contest. So there's going to be two other prizes given away, not with the battalion. There will be three
winners. That's right.
Because three is the magic number, if you know anything about fairy tales or things like that.
Or a Schoolhouse Rock.
Now, we are not going to actually you don't have to do anything different. Once you enter, you're entered in all three contests. But we're not going to tell you the actual criterion for the other two, because it might skew the contest. We're going to explain those once everything's finished, but we have set up some rules. So we're going to get one prize will be a battalion. One prize will be this new fancy conversion that I don't even know what it is. Haven't seen it yet. Brian's bringing it. He should be here in about an hour.
Yep.
And he should be here in about an hour. That's plenty of time to get here for this show.
Even though he's actually done his reading earlier in the broadcast through the magic of editing.
Yes, yes.
Woo!
And also a Someone's going to win a subscription on Scene Lurker.
No way, David Wettek.
That is the truth. Oh, my God. I talked to Bubba himself. He said, go ahead and
that is
give away a subscription.
That's a totally swinging thing for someone to win, you know.
So suddenly, if 100 people enter, your odds of winning went from 1 in 100 to 1 in 33. That's three times the odds.
Cool.
So, yeah, I mean, there's no new stuff on the Tomb Kings front other than it's still coming, and it's going to be here in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I don't think we've discussed any, or nothing new has come to pass that we haven't already discussed last week. The book is going to be $37.25 U.S. retail. look for it on the 7th of May. Oh, Games Workshop, medals. Let's talk about that.
Yes, yeah, I put that in there. Now, I've been hearing rumors around, in fact, and Stouter from West Coast Hammer.
Mm-hmm.
He posted something up on our forum saying, have you heard about this? They're GW is supposedly dropping metals and going to resin.
Sounds like a truism.
Well, I tested it by going into a friendly local gaming store and saying, hey, I need to order this metal thing, and you don't have one on the shelf, and I couldn't see it on the website. Can I get one?
And they punched you in the mouth?
Yes.
Get out of my store, you metal-ordering person.
No, but apparently they said they had to check if they could still order it because it's metal.
Yes.
And I was, what do you mean you have to check? And basically, apparently, many stores have gotten the email from GW saying, if you need anything off the metals list,
do it
order
now.
It now, because once it's gone, it's gone.
Which means we'll see some fairly significant changes to every army across the board. They have to change their packaging. They have to come out with new miniatures.
And I actually said, I go, so I can't get, because they didn't have any hammers at the store. And I said, so hammers, like boxes of five metals? And they're like, yep, that's on the list. I go, what about like character? Yes, anything. They said the list was quite lengthy.
So let's speculate as to what that means. It means one of two things, either new sculpts for everything, which sounds difficult, or they're going to take those old molds. And instead of metal, they'll do it with resin.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
All right. So the question remains, when are we going to start seeing these new resins roll off the line?
Now, a lot of people, I even said, I heard resin's very brittle and easy to break. And people are complaining that if you get a big, you know, one of those big metal models, if it falls off the table, it's going to shatter and you're going to be buying lots of extras.
Yeah.
To which I actually mentioned that in front of Ken, the owner of UGG,
mm-hmm.
To which he said resin. There's lots of different types of resin,
right.
And early resin models used to be very brittle, but
the Hydra, the chubby Hydra, that mm-hmm. one is an older resin. If I dropped that, I'd have a whole bunch of pieces.
Yeah, but he was saying like the Uncharted Seas stuff and especially the Dystopian Wars resin models.
Yeah,
he goes, it's a newer resin, it's more resilient, it's not as brittle, and not that you want to throw it at the floor.
I wouldn't. Yeah,
but he says it's much sturdier, it's a much better product. So I was actually really excited to hear that. That it's going to be a better product. Now, I did read something really weird, and someone actually posted this on our forums, and they put up a link. They said you could, like, Google it or whatever. But apparently, if you're filing mm-hmm. and doing anything with resin...
Yeah, wear a mask.
Yeah, you're going to have to... We're going to have to get some hospital masks or something like that.
I do recommend it, yeah. I've had to do that with several resin, larger resin models.
Yeah, actually...
And you don't want to breathe that stuff in, necessarily.
No, and in fact, that's what he said, is that this stuff is the little flakes and the dust... He goes, when you're done, you want to clean up thoroughly. He goes, you even want to go up and wash, like I said, because if you get on your clothes or in your hair.
It's a little bit like the old days. I don't know if you've ever had a ton of true lead models, but yeah, you want to wash your hands. You don't necessarily want to lick your fingers.
Yeah.
Especially not after modeling.
I mean, I don't know how bad it is, but the guy that was posting it on the forum actually compared it to asbestos as far as breathing it in and getting it in your lungs. So I was like, eesh. But apparently the resin models don't have a lot by the way of mold lines and needing of scraping and filing. So
we'll see how
unless
they
you're
out.
Doing heavy conversions. But I'm actually really excited.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the new products.
Yeah, me too. So I think that's it for
Why don't we take ourselves the first little break?
Yeah, it's break time. Oh, my goodness. Look at this. We're getting a break only 15 minutes into the show.
Oh, that's all right.
Actually 20.
We'll take a quick jump off, and then when we get back, we can maybe get into the game manager section.
All right. Games manager section when we come back.
All right.
Hey, Chris. What are you doing tonight?
Man, I have a massive list of things I need to go get tonight.
Really? Like what?
Well, I promised my roommate that I'd pick up that new Supernatural detective novel that comes out today. Then I have to go get some gifts for family and friends for upcoming events.
Oh, really? Like what?
Well, my niece wants a necklace with a pendant. I need a TARDIS for Doctor Who. Let's see, the next expansion for Killer Bunnies. I need a Kadar Man of War from War Machine. I need a box of Saurus Warriors. All right, those last two are for me.
Heck, man, I was going to ask if you wanted to go to Unique Gifts and Games and have a game of Warhammer.
Cool. I'll meet you there in 30 minutes.
Wait, you can't go do all that stuff and meet me at UGG in 30 minutes.
No, but I can be at UGG in 25 minutes and get all that other stuff done in 5.
What?
That's right. I can. I can get all those things at Unique Gifts and Games. So I'll meet you there.
Dude, that's awesome.
Not only is it awesome, but my wife is expecting me to take hours to get it all done, so we have plenty of time to get in that game.
Oh, you.
Unique Gifts and Games in Grays Lake, Illinois. Visit them on the web at www.uniqueg.com.
Unique Gifts and Games understands but does not endorse fibbing to your spouse in order to squeeze in a pickup game.
Okay, we are
back.
All right, and we're going to move right into the Garage Manager section. And the Garage Manager section, as always, is brought to you by Chaos Orc Superstores. They have a wide range of products, including Chessex Dice, Vallejo Paints, and assorted board and miniature-based games. They not only stock current GW releases, but they also keep a large selection of out-of-print and classic models on hand for the collector. A majority of these items are new in the blister or box, and a few are loose or painted, but they're always clearly labeled on the website because they have WYSIWYG sales. What you see in the picture is the exact thing being sent to you. Because of that, obviously everything on site is in stock and almost always ships out within 24 hours. So give them a try. We've had a lot of our listeners have given them a try. We've heard nothing but good things about them. So go ahead and give them a try, especially if you're in Australia and you're paying double for no apparent reason. Then go ahead and try to order from Chaos Orc. Even with the shipping, it's cheaper.
Don't just try. Do.
Or do not.
There is no
there
try.
There is no try.
Merely order from Chaos Orc.
Merely order. Yeah. Okay, so
modeling, gaming, and reading. So in the modeling section, Dave, I know you've done more than I have. Why don't you jump in and tell me what you've done here?
Okay, since we're going to be playing some Malifaux, hopefully this week, to get ready for Garage Gamer, and you were interested in Rasputina.
Right, well, for the theme of it. It's a
right,
Gothic girl, yeah.
Right. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. I picked up the Rasputina box, and I put that crew together for you.
Cool.
So they're ready to play. I think I'm going to start painting some of them, actually, maybe even tomorrow.
Neato burrito.
Well, I mean, she's the ice. She control. She's her like patron demon god thing that gives her powers. Winter.
Okay.
So she can control snow and ice, which is why she's got that big, floofy hat on.
Chilling.
And then she's got the little mini skirt and striped socks. Because as long as you're wearing a hat,
yeah,
you're good.
Right. She's wearing a mini skirt and stripy socks because she needs boys to buy the box, yeah.
Yes, but she also comes with an ice golem and a bunch of little ice demons, so that'll be pretty. I'm going to try my hand at just putting in the dark blue, light blue, and then edging in with the ice blue, you know? And
yeah.
Kind of see. I'm thinking I could paint that one up pretty darn quick, actually. So
yeah, it sounds like mostly a dry brushing technique.
Yeah, okay. That's almost like painting a tree man, basically. I mean, or
except blue.
So I'm going to get that done. I did paint, and I'm just about. I'm finished with the plague furnace, except that Harrison cracked the little chain that leads from them pulling on it, and I glued it back, but it's not 100%. So I've decided to do a little.
Well, you know what? It's pretty hard to see.
It is, except I know it's there. So eventually what I'm going to do is I'm going to take some green stuff and roll it long, flat, and thin, like almost like, you know, flat spaghetti noodles. And around certain parts of the plague furnace, there are, it looks like just straps of cloth wrapped around the wood.
Yep.
So I'm going to make some real flat and wrap a little bit around. Like, I don't think this is going to break. The glue will hold. But if I flatten out some thin green stuff about the size of that width and just wrap it around a little bit, it'll just look like more cloth wrapped around, you know, odd things on the, it'll blend in and it'll support
it. The whole thing
it.
Is designed to look ramshackle. By putting a little extra on there, it's just going to add to the,
exactly.
to the motif. Yeah.
But I am super pleased with this model. I know not everyone can see it, although I am this, I know I always say I'm going to put pictures up on our forums. I am putting this picture up. I actually put it up on Twitter and people said, oh, that actually looks pretty nice. It's probably the best model I've ever painted, at least.
Wow, okay.
I don't know. I'm just looking at it, and I tried to get, like, the smoke is starting off really bright green by the big ball of warpstone, and it actually gradually fades back to gray. And I actually went to GW's website, and under the search engine just typed in painting rust, and I got 4 articles came up, and the simplest one was on the how to paint ogres. And it was just because some of them, it was like how to paint rust. And it gave you like the 10 different steps of colors to paint rust. Or they had like a how to paint bronze with little bits like where the bolts come together. You get a little of that blue and green patina that builds up. But with the ogres, it was simple. It was do a coat of dark flesh and then stipple on a light coat of vermin brown, followed by a stipple of blazing orange, which when you first do it and you really try to get a lot out of that brush, it's blazing orange. It's like freaking neon orange. And it won't
look right.
But it did. If you stipple it on lightly, it really worked, going with the graduals and making a lot of it out. And then just sort of dry brushing and scraping on some chainmail. And, man, I was so pleased how it turned out. It took me like all week to paint this one thing. Part of the reason it took so long was because I didn't realize that, well, I mean, I built it most of the way. And then realized if I don't stop, I'll never actually be able to paint this. And I stopped, but I was still having some trouble getting in on the close parts. But all the metal's rusted, and I've just been looking at it pretty much all day since I finished it this afternoon. Finished the little characters that go on it. So I'm super pleased with that.
Well done. It looks really good, and it'll be fun to see it on the table as well.
Yeah.
Is Harrison using this one tonight?
No, he's tonight. Harrison's taking two level 4 gray seers. He's going to get each one is going to get 3 of the 6 spells from Ruin.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth spell,
Lore Master?
No, they can each take 3 because they're level 4. So they'll take
I didn't know they can only take 3.
Well, no, they'll take 3 and then their fourth spell, whatever the first one rolls for the fourth spell,
mm-hmm.
he will dump and take the 13th spell because all gray seers can take the 13th spell.
Oh.
Then the second one will take the remaining 3. And the 13th spell.
Oh, God. Okay.
And one of them has Power Scroll. So if he can't get one through with one, he will force it down your throat with the other. That's his plan.
Yipes.
And in fact, he's pulling about 20 or 30 extra rats right now so that if he actually manages to wipe out a unit and transfer it to rats, he'll have it ready to change to rats. So, yeah, he has no bell, no furnace. He did take one. He took the A-bomb because, well, we have the model, and it's just darn gorgeous.
Probably.
Yeah,
you probably should.
But so that's his plan tonight.
Very cool.
Yeah, but that, like I said, that's pretty much all of the. I mean, dude, that took me forever to paint, but I'm so darned happy with it.
Well done. I'm glad you're done with it. My modeling is a little simpler. I finally did get the package of Abyssal Dwarves from Mantic.
Woohoo!
Yeah. So it's about 20 of the regular, they're called Black Souls, I think.
Right.
Which would equate to Chaos Dwarf Warriors.
Okay.
10 of the Abyssal, the Guard, the probably what will become my.
Why don't you just call them what we would call them, because you're going to proxy them out. What you're using them for.
10 of the Obsidian.
I don't think Ronnie will get too mad with you.
No, I think he understands. Well, I told him straight up the day I met him, I'm buying these to convert them into Chaos Dwarves. He's like, oh, cool.
Yeah, hey, buy the models. Do what you, honestly, I think if you just bought them and tossed them in the trash, as long as you paid for them, he's not going to get upset with you.
I'd be upset if I threw them in the trash.
Well, yeah, but you know what I'm saying.
But, you know, the funny thing is I will eventually at some point be using them to play Kings of War 2. I'm looking forward to trying it. But that being said, 10 of them were going to be the Obsidian Guard. I have 5 of the Bull Centaurs. I have, 20 total of the Annihilators, the Blunderbusses.
Right.
And then that box set of the Command.
Uh-huh.
One was a Fighting Lord. One is a Wizard Lord, or, you know, High Priest.
Uh-huh.
And then the other one is a Bull Centaur Captain.
Cool.
And then finally one War Engine, which they call the Katsukan Rocket Launcher. It's just a death rocket.
Right.
And they are, in terms of quality, it's actually, I wasn't 100% aware of this at first, but the plastics are just the dwarf miniatures from Mantic.
Okay.
With lots and lots and lots of metal bits. So, like, the bottom half is just a regular dwarf, and then you glue on the metal bit on top, which will be the Abyssal Dwarf part.
Really? And it's metal?
So they're effectively conversions.
Yeah, I didn't realize they were metal.
The Chaos Dwarf part is the metal, and then the plastic part is the old dwarf.
Huh, I thought it was all plastic. I'm surprised. I did not know they were doing metal and plastic mix.
I didn't know either. But in terms of the plastic, they're perfectly good quality. The metals themselves, let's say that it's maybe a couple of years back in terms of metals with a lot of flash.
Mm-hmm.
So there's cleaning involved, but it's no big deal. There's not a lot of mold lines. There's not a lot of, I see no problems in the molding themselves. The detail's definitely there. It's just going to take a little work to get the extra flash off, but I kind of like that sort of work.
Yeah.
It definitely reminds me of a few years ago, kind of the old days of, like, lots and lots of metals, almost no plastics. And every model, you sort of, you give it a once-over, and you make sure that there's no little, you know, thread bits of flash on
it. Well, I remember when I first, I mean, dude, I've only been playing this game about 4 years, and when I first started buying the models, I was like, and you're like, that's flash. I remember you showing me, going through and saying, okay, this is what you need to clean off.
Yeah.
And it, I mean, but it's funny, because I literally came in on the tail end of getting really flashy metals.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, new modelers are not going to really know what flash means.
I have a whole ogre army, and I mean, half of that, I mean, everything that's not a core unit, and that is metal. And there was almost no flash on any of it.
No, GW is getting better and better. They still exist. The flash is still out there. You have to look for it. But I suspect that we won't with GW much longer. I mean, that's what they're saying. So it's it's fun to still play with metals.
My ogre army won't weigh a ton.
No.
My Uzi weighs a ton.
But I still have them all in check.
All, you have the ogres in check now, too?
Like I said this morning through text to you.
Which struck me as odd because you never preemptively text. Like, I text you, and you rarely ever even text back. I'll, like, text and be like, I hope he got this.
I was
eating lunch, and my phone goes, dunk-a-dunk, and I'm like, that's probably your mom saying, hey, what, it's for lunch or something.
Little did you know.
And little did I know, you put everyone in check.
Well, I just, you know, you're my very good friend. You're my dear and closest friend, and I wanted the world to know.
Oh, so I was the only one.
Well, you're the, I mean, through you, uh-huh. I want the world to know that I have you all in check.
Okay. That's interesting. Oh, you know what? I wanted to tell you, speaking
of... Let me finish.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were done.
No, I mean, that's it now. I haven't had a chance to really... Kitty's trying to eat my chicken.
Get that cat out of here, Harrison.
Get that cat out of here. But, no, I haven't had a chance to really sit down and start the painting process, but, you know, I've got like 100 and some odd models in there. I've got a lot of work to do. So right now it's primarily the cleaning. By the time I was done with most of it, I had this big, beautiful, you know, pile of metal.
Now, are there's all... Now, is there plastic all plastic, or is it a plastic resin mix?
Their plastic is plastic, but it's a harder plastic than what we're used to for GW.
Okay. I mean, do you wash them beforehand? I've been hearing a lot about that lately.
On Mantic?
Yeah.
No, I don't think you need to wash these specifically,
okay.
No.
I'm just curious. I know some people wash their GW plastics as well. So.
You know what? I've never done that. I mean, I've washed resins. I've never washed plastics.
Right.
I suppose with these, it wouldn't hurt. It wouldn't hurt you, but I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, but then again, I'm no professional quality painter, so.
Yeah.
But that's what I've been doing. No painting to speak of, but mostly modeling, getting them ready to be painted. I'm going to have to start the priming and painting assembly line real soon here.
Now, speaking of other models, I realized I totally should have brought this up, and I'm sorry to... Are you done with your model?
Yeah, do it.
I did receive in the mail literally today a giganto box from Canada, Gordon Sundin. I am sending him some Tomb King stuff when it comes out, plus my Hell Cannon that I've had for a year and never built. So, and he sent me some. He said, and Brian Steele just walked into the room, ladies and gentlemen. The man Steele has just walked in. So,
nice,
beautiful.
Brian doesn't realize this, but I also have him in check.
You are, by the way, Chris has everyone in check,
I got
apparently.
You in check, sucka.
Well, you know what? Let me finish up this story in 2 minutes, and then we'll take a quick pause, although not a real honest commercial break. And but so I traded him, and he sent us, I got a bunch of demons, which he said we can use for either one, including both books. They are on round bases, but I'm deciding whether or not I want to convert them back to square bases. I also got in there two sets of the High Elves from the Island of Blood.
Okay.
So we have High Elves galore. What else was in that box, Harrison? There's some Wood Elves that he actually donated to the show.
Okay.
And we're going to be putting those Wood Elves up on eBay with the book, if anyone is interested. We're going to do that, like, next week.
Yay!
I got some Beast Men. He basically, like, little starters from a bunch of different army stuff that he had that he just didn't want. He's like, I'm not going to use it. And
cool. Sounds very nice.
Yeah, it's really cool. Included in that was some Chaos Dwarfs.
Ooh,
some old plastics, that. Which... But, Chris, so you've got some more Chaos Dwarfs because I don't play Chaos Dwarfs.
Cool.
And so, like I said,
I most certainly do.
Yeah, there's some Blunderbuss in there. I think there's a Blunderbuss Command and some... I mean, and these are the old school tall hat GW models. So
Nice.
But check this out, and I know the people on the radio can't see it, or on the iTunes, but a guy I work with collects military miniatures, and he found out that
about the old historicals.
Yeah, and I do.
Yeah, you just caught my interest.
And this is from King and Country Original Toy Soldiers. This is a country, designed and produced in the former British Crown Colony of Hong Kong. I mean, that's what it says on their label.
Okay.
It's a British company. He got this, and he's like, you know, I got this, and it's too big of a scale for me to use. Would you like it? And I said, sure. Now, I'm going to put down the mic and open this box and show this to you. I haven't actually opened it to look at it yet. So, now, this is a friend of mine from work, Mr. Glass, and he, this is a 1/30th scale metal miniature tank. I'm not 100% certain.
It just looks like a toy tank.
It's not knowing, knowing my military history, I'm not sure what type it is. Yeah, it's 1/30th scale.
It's a Panther. It's a Tiger tank.
Oh, is it?
I believe so.
And
it's a German late World War II tank.
I mean, it comes with a crew. Yeah,
I think. Am I right on that?
I don't know exactly where everybody goes.
Let me see the crew.
It's
a German. Oops, come back here.
Oh, it is a German, because, oh, look, here's the little SS commander.
Yep. There you go.
And other dude. This guy probably goes in here.
Neat.
And
wow, that's actually a really nice-looking model.
Yeah, and I'm like, are you sure you just want to give this to me? He goes, "It's the scale is too big. It's not the scale that I use when I'm building my miniatures." So you could have the guy in it, or that just actually spins out of the way. So it's got a basically this German tank with the full crew. It's insanely beautiful. It was a really nice.
I tell you what, no wonder an insane regime like the Nazis actually did well for themselves. Those uniforms. I mean, I want to wear those damn things, and they were bastards.
I would suggest you not walk around wearing a
SS
uniform.
No, of course not. But
uniform.
I mean, you can't tell me that's not a cool hat. That's just a cool hat.
Okay, I'm just saying. I mean, people look funny at the guys who ride motorcycles wearing the German World War I helmets. If you were to go around in full SS regalia.
I'm the kind of person that the Germans killed.
Yeah, well, I'm just that's not the point. Just thinking it's a dangerous game you play when you dress up like someone from the SS.
They weren't big fans of gypsies.
No, they weren't. Okay, Harrison, stop playing with that. Okay, so we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we are going to talk to
Mr.
Brian. Well, we'll keep going with the modeling, gaming, and reading, but he can actually jump in on it finally.
Yes.
So, awesome.
All right.
Is your name a killing word? Is your mother a hamster and your father smells of elderberries? Did it turn out that those were the droids you were looking for? If you know what I'm talking about, chances are you're a gamer. What better place to get your game on than the Game Preserve? The Game Preserve specializes in analog games of all types, like board games, family games, chess sets and jigsaw puzzles, and especially hobby games. They carry the complete GW line as well as Magic the Gathering, D&D, and HeroClix. They have gaming space for tournaments, game nights, and demo games just about any night of the week. So stop shopping at the jerk store and be one of the gaming elite. And visit the Game Preserve with 4 Indiana locations to choose from. 2 in Indianapolis, 1 in Bloomington, and 1 in the gaming capital of the universe, Lafayette, Indiana. Visit them at GamePreserveStores.com or call 765-448-4200. Game Preserve. If you're not shopping here, the only winning move is not to play.
Okay, and we are back.
For the second time, in fact.
Yes, folks, we have just time warped ahead 98 minutes, and we took a break. I went to dump the sound card, everything we recorded on the memory card to the computer, and it said these files are corrupted.
The sound card dumped David.
Yeah, I went to dump the card dumped me. So we are back with our guests.
We have to reintroduce.
We have to reintroduce new to the show, our good friend Aaron Schmidt. Aaron?
Hello, everybody.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Aaron is part of NW2, our gaming group. He is playing in our campaign. You play Warriors of Chaos.
Warriors of Chaos, that's correct.
And as an outsider, what does NW2 stand for?
Northern Wasteland Wargamers.
Oh.
So the Northern Wastelands Wargamers. That's the name of our gaming group.
Okay.
We're going to make a banner and be
so geeky. More like NW squared.
Right. Yes. Exactly.
Yes. NW squared is
and
more
and from
correct,
NWA right over here.
So, yes. Straight out of Compton is Mr. Brian Steele, the man, the myth, the legend.
Hello.
The funky butt himself.
I don't
that's
know.
That's my dancing routine.
I was going to assume you meant maybe it smells funky.
No, I'm a dancer. Dancer.
Brian's dancer much smaller in real life.
Hold him closer.
Strange
dancer.
Strange.
Suddenly I feel like I'm in a plane going down.
I brought in Elton John.
I'm 10 pounds lighter on radio.
I'm 10 pounds heavier when there's a camera makes adds 10 pounds. I don't know exactly how many cameras are on me at the moment, but
those so, damn smartphones.
Yes. So,
I'm laughing my bum off because all of y'all with your smartphones, and I'm the only person who's not getting tracked or bugged right now.
I don't care if they track me or bug me. I'm not doing anything wrong.
Oh, look at you with your old school phone.
Yeah, what's up?
Kicking it.
I'm a Luddite, baby.
Yeah. No, I'm checking my phone because Grant Fetter has just said he wants to know if Brian is staying the night, so when he gets done, maybe he can still get
Grant
over here.
Grant Fetter's
and,
looking for a little roommate action.
I will be here, but maybe not here.
Okay. Well, if you're crashing here, this is the first I heard of it, but you're welcome to.
No, I have made arrangements
Grant
elsewhere.
Grant Fetter is a lonely man.
Handsome man. Lonely man.
Brown chicken, brown cow.
But I can.
But he'll be around. When he gets out of Chris Cornell, he may come by to pick up
his
work.
His fancy war shrine.
Yeah, which is beautiful. We're going to get some pictures
that
of that.
I'm going to spike model myself.
So,
Murmur.
Okay, we're going to do the modeling, gaming, and reading for
again.
The second time. We'll do it quickly.
Or at least quicker.
Yeah, I did. I'm done with my modeling. Even if I wasn't done, I don't remember where I left off.
I haven't the slightest idea. Okay, well, let's go into some modeling now. I was talking about my Abyssal Dwarves. You were talking about your Plague Furnace.
I finished the Plague Furnace, and I painted it. And honestly, Brian and Aaron came down and looked at it, and they both not only complimented it, but they pointed out the things that I was really, like, hoping that looked good without me even asking about it.
Hey, you put it together.
Dude, I am... Shut up.
Yep.
I am all sorts of proud that two guys with your
David,
guys' talent looked at this and said this was a really good job.
David
so.
Gets four tentacles up.
You did a good job.
So, I am...
I don't have four tentacles.
You're a wiener at the game of life. Good.
I'm glad no one else talked during that, so it was very clear, crisp, and clear. And with that, I spelled crisp, C-H-R-I-S-P.
Oh, and you might as well spell it that way since he pronounces wog, waff. So if we're going to start changing
the G-H waf. Is an F sound to me.
It's F. Yeah. Whoa. The waff.
Well, if it's rough, why can't it be waff? R-O-U-G-H.
Rough. That silence just happened again.
Actually, I hate to be the one that says it.
No, love to be the one.
No,
go on.
The GH is actually silent. It's wah.
No, it isn't. It's not.
It is.
Don't be ridiculous. Come on, it's wah.
Well, thank God we're it was wog, and then I started hearing all the people in England say wah, and so
it's their way of saying war.
You know, in
it's how orcs pronounce the word war. They're screaming wah.
I kind of like that.
I thought we discussed that it meant shoes earlier, didn't we?
Christopher says it means shoes because they're barefoot. That's why they're so angry.
In the original Orcish, they actually name all their shoes War.
Right.
It's a little known fact.
That's cool. That is very cool because, you know me, I likes the orcs. So it's interesting to hear that.
One of my fellow comrades of the pen told me that.
That's cool. That's really neat.
That is cool.
Yeah, because I know a lot of people
isn't
don't
cool,
like how
Chris?
The orcs.
What's that? That is pretty cool.
Isn't that cool?
There's
a lot of people don't like how orc speak is written in that really cockney sort of, you know, accent stuff.
It is what it is.
Doesn't bother me a bit.
No,
it is something for sure. I agree.
Let's move on to modeling before I punch Chris. I'm not even an orc fan. Why am I defending?
We're going to be sponsoring Punching Chris. This time brought to you by the Cranky Lawyer and
Cranky
Brian
Lawyer.
Still.
Cranky Lawyer. Oh, I just got an email. Cranky Lawyer has donated $50
to punch Chris.
That's
crazy.
Chris.
How is he hearing this live?
That's amazing.
Hey, technology, baby.
That money's coming straight to me.
He's bugged this cat.
So, okay.
Hi.
Sorry, I don't want to know where
the mic is. Mr. Brian Steele, what have you been building?
Right now, professionally, I've been doing a bunch of Dark Eldar for a gentleman. I'm doing a massive Dark Eldar commission that I promise if you're listening to this, you're almost done. I promise. And anything else that I talk about
is customizing, just painting.
I'm doing a little bit of custom, but it's mostly just assembly and paint on this.
Okay, I just got to ask, how cool is that to do that for a living? That you just get to build and paint models.
I love my job.
How's business?
Right now, crazy busy. I just actually recently went back to writing part time as well. My former publisher, Mongoose Publishing. I'm back to them part-time.
Nice. What are you writing for?
Right now, the Traveler line, the Traveler role-playing game line.
Oh, I remember Traveler.
And so a lot of my days are spent
so cool.
at the keyboard, and then my nights are spent in the workshop or at the paint table.
So how's that free time coming along?
I get about one good gaming night a week where I say I'm not gonna do anything else. I'm gonna play games.
Nice.
Like 40K, for instance.
Okay, fine. Whatever you gotta do.
Or I've actually
everyone has to WAP sometime.
I've been playing a lot of fantasy lately too, because my lovely bride has put together a Bretonian army.
Good choice.
Sweet.
Which she is painting and everything herself. She's very proud of, because she's doing it in a Westeros theme from Game of Thrones.
Oh, that's tight.
And
that's
she's cool. Done all the heraldry on the shields.
What does that mean? That's awesome.
The houses in the Game of Thrones.
Isn't there a game like Tales of something of
there's
Westeros?
There's a board game. There's a board game. The continent is called Westeros.
Okay.
So she's got basically one unit of all of her knights are painted in the various House Stark colors and insignias with the sub houses from the books.
Oh, that's
and
cool. Is it she's all doing House a Stark? Is
that she's basing it basically right before the beginning of the first game. So her Grail Relicai is going to be the last Targaryen. She's doing a lot of really cool stuff, and I promised her I'd do a little bit of modeling.
These are a whole
for
bunch of
whatnot.
Random sounds to me.
No, if
dude, I've only seen one episode of the show, so I don't know either.
This is from House Flarble Gargle, and
basically, she's got a lot of really cool stuff going for her, and she's instead of doing the bright, crisp, clean knightly orders and whatnot, since she's doing it in this Game of Thrones theme,
so it's there's a
lot
more realistic.
More, there's a lot more dirt and grime.
I do remember the name Stark. What was their symbol?
It's a running wolf.
Okay. Yeah, it's like
in
a
the show. In the show, it's a wolf's head, but
it's been too long, and I don't remember them all anymore.
Yeah,
so.
it's a running wolf because they're the ones from the north.
Is she going to make up a character that looks like the Hound?
I've told her that I would do a custom sculpt for her Hound.
You could get one of those like space wolf helmets, maybe.
Well, we could probably pirate it from her space wolf army.
There you go. Oh,
wow. Just don't say anything.
It writes itself.
We'll just nab a helmet.
Didn't I have seven of these?
I'm sure.
I could have sworn it was an even
six.
Half dozen,
yeah,
sweetie.
Six. That'd be six.
It's a unit of six. No. Yeah, so she's got this Bretonian army. So she's actually got a winning record with her Bretonians. And
so does Christopher.
In our group of friends, we don't do a lot of the hard power gaming. We have a lot of just for fun.
We've actually discussed that. The Lafayette crew is generally they play for the fun of it, not for the hard edge of it.
So it's a lot of fun to see her play, and it's even more fun to see the Lance formation work.
It works. You just have to address what you're going to do with that target before you charge them, because if they're steadfast, you're dead.
Well, you just kill a lot of stuff. And hit him from the side.
Yeah, but if you're playing against Skaven, you can't do that. But that's tactics. We can talk about that later.
Yeah. But regardless, yeah. So I've been doing a lot of Dark Eldar stuff for a commission. I just finished up a couple of Cornate ogre models for Grant Fetter.
Nice. And we're getting to see him before Grant. He
saw pictures.
Okay.
Which, in fact, actually, the picture of the ogre prince had a round base on it when I showed him the picture, because I flubbed it and built him like a 40K demon prince. And so he's like, I can't really tell in the picture, but I think, is that a square base or a round base? And then suddenly I go, oh, well, I better go find me a 50mm square base, which, if you notice, I didn't have any,
so I took
one of my Skaven movement trays and cut the 50mm section
out of
my... I thought
I recognized that from the customizable move.
Customizable.
Customizable.
So it is
amazing.
It is the right size and shape and whatnot. And because he's got some sculpted stuff on the... Or he's got some, like, terrain-y type stuff on there, it is not as, like, obvious.
They make perfect bases in a pinch.
They really do.
They do.
They really do.
Yeah,
But I'm really happy with the War Shrine more than anything, with the boiling blood letters and whatnot, which is a lot of fun.
The War Shrine is nice.
It's a lot to cut. It's fun to cut up blood letters.
It's a what is it? It's a drag. What is it? A
dragon ogre.
It's a dragon ogre dragging the cauldron from Scrag the Devourer.
Oh, that's right. What that is. Cool.
And then I basically cut up a bunch of blood letters to make them like they're coming out of the blood in the cauldron.
Nice.
And then poured a little bit of a clear epoxy in there, so that way some of the ogre-y bits that are on there aren't quite so ogre-y.
And then plastic card for the corn symbol?
Plastic card for the cornate skull, and then there's some chains from the 40K Chaos Vehicle Sprue.
Okay.
And actually, that big chunk of wood, the lumber on the back, is one of the crossbeams from my Screaming Bell conversion. The
oh, cool. Yeah.
The Kit Bash Screaming Bell.
Now, this is the second take, so you haven't talked about your Screaming Bell yet.
Yeah. Basically, long story short, the old Screaming Bell from 15 years ago is pathetically small compared to the new one, and I wanted a large and in charge one, so I took the Warhammer Siege engine, the Siege Tower.
Now, this thing is double the size. I mean, it's sitting right next to my Plague Furnace, and it's double the size
of
my Plague Furnace.
Which is exactly what I wanted, because I field both of them a lot.
Okay.
And I didn't want my Screaming Bell to be dwarfed by my Plague Furnace, and I didn't. And the model kits, because they're from the same box, they're too similar when they sit next to each other. They are obviously the same thing.
I can see that, yeah.
It's not like the Plague Claw Catapult and the Warp Lightning Cannon where you can see that it's the same thing, but there's enough differences that you can position it differently.
Yeah, if you flip the base around, too, it can go in any of three angles.
You can really change
it up.
The Plague Furnace Kit / Screaming Belt, they're the same model with a different dangly bit.
Right. Yep.
And so I was like, screw that noise.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
And so I took the Siege Tower and put it together and decided
classy.
That it was going to be what I was going to...
Capital K.
What I was going to... what I was going to base
Thank
my
you.
Screaming Bell on. That was awesome. But it was... It was too wide. It took up almost an entire regiment's worth of space.
Right.
So that was when I got out the modeling saw and I cut the middle inch out of the Siege Tower and sandwiched the two halves together and then putted it together with a bunch of fur and things. And
that's just nutty. I was saying before, it's like a Tom and Jerry cartoon where you cut the house down the middle and squeeze it to a smaller house.
It was too big. I wanted big. I wanted huge. I wanted large and in charge, but not that big. It would have been too much.
Instead of being about a 3x5, which is what this one is, the 60x100, that was a 5x5. Right?
Yeah, it was like an entire block of guys, and then you have to associate the guys around it,
right.
So that pushes it, and it's just
on the sides of the Siege Tower Screaming Bell conversion. Brian's got really really well done, Skaven glyphs.
I wanted to bring that up. The plastic card, representing the Skaven glyphs look really good. It's an excellent
really
touch.
Cool.
Thank you.
They really stand out, and they really tie it all together.
And it looks like we said before, the front has got all that. It's like skin.
The actual siege tower has got a bunch of like leather hides that they've got tacked up, which is actually a legitimate historic tactic to keep arrows from punching the guys inside.
Right,
so, right.
Well, I was planning on painting them up like orc skins and humans with tattoos and whatnot on there anyway, but when I saw the model in half, the front of that leather hide section
was no longer meshed.
It looked really goony, so I was like, all right, and I got out a bunch of the Gale Force 9 gray putty and made a giant furry section.
Yeah. Scalps.
It also added weight to the model, so because I had a real hard time with it being kind of front heavy.
Okay.
So when because I've got a bunch of the old metal, two decades old Skaven, and you put them on there, and it'll go and fall forward at pretty much any time I move my movement tray. So this helped weigh the model down. And then on the inside where the Radogir that's pulling the chain sits, I puttied that whole floor to cover up the giant saw crease, but also to give, again, more bottom weight to the model.
It's a gorgeous model.
What I like about this is that, I mean, if you're familiar with the fluff of the original Bell, the one from the tower in Talea, which is supposed to, like Warhammer Italy. Apparently there was this huge tower made by humans that was effectively corrupted by the Horned One. And this truly reminds me in many ways. It's almost like a pure Skaven homage to that tower with the bell on top. It really looks like you were tapping into the theme of what it is.
Yeah.
It really does. I mean, the existing Games Workshop kit for the Screaming Bell is fantastic.
It's great. It's fantastic.
But this one, it just punches up that centerpiece thing.
And that's what I wanted.
When it's painted, it's even just going to be
Well, and I figured the whole line of sight issue, they already wrote in the rule that it says the Grey Seer can see everything around it anyway,
right?
So it doesn't matter how tall it is. I'm not being a cheesebag by being like it's 12 inches tall, so
well,
I can see the whole battlefield.
Sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. Being this big means that anything can see you, but everything could see it before.
Exactly.
Anyway, such a big model.
And if it starts getting cannoned off the table too much, you can go back to your other one, which is pretty much just like a little xylophone that they're pushing around, right? Like one of those little xylophones.
Well, if you look at it, it's probably about 3 inches taller,
yeah,
in total. And honestly, That's not going to be that big.
No.
If they can see the one, they can see the other. There's
for
not
sure.
a piece of terrain that's going to hide one and not the other.
And the other tallest model in the Skaven kits collectively is the Hellpit,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not using one of their Hellpits. I'm using one of my Hellpits that I built before the model came out,
right?
Which is about an inch shorter anyway, so...
It balances
Oh, I know. It's terrible.
Sculpting for advantage.
Oh, exactly.
Sculpting for advantage.
I mean, it's still as big. It's still as big as a Stegodon.
Man, all these.
I know.
It's actually just a hell pit with a straw coming out of some water features.
Because it's breathing.
It's a tea.
It's these sculptors and hobby gamers, man. You can't trust them. You can't trust them. They're always angling for next.
Yeah, you know, they spend.
You should see all my
weeks,
sniper
if not
Giselles.
Months making this beautiful model, and it's an inch shorter on purpose.
It's
ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
Gets my.
They went around to all. I know you were going around to all those tournaments and taking pictures of all the terrain just to get an idea of the size.
Pictures? No, I used my contacts in the industry to make sure that I got all the tournament organizers on board initially. Be like, nothing taller than 5 inches, please.
There you go.
No, the thing that I've been working on the last couple days is my local game store and one of your sponsors, the Game Preserve in Lafayette, Indiana,
which we love
absolutely. Has he ever heard the commercial we made for him?
I don't know. I don't know if Chico's ever he's ever watched it.
Well, you know what? If Carlos doesn't listen, then he gets on board with Ken, Ken only gets to listen in about 15, 20-minute segments, and apparently doesn't know where the pause button is. He's like, the show's too long. I can't listen to it. I only have like 20 minutes. I'm like, well, the show's going to be longer than that with all the
find your commercial.
Our sponsors love our show, and they know they're getting business from us because people tell them that. I guess they don't need to listen.
I listen to it.
And I appreciate that.
See, I want to go into UGG now next time I see Ken and be like, man.
You should have heard what
I don't know.
To.
I don't know what
in
happened.
The last
it was like,
20
it was like
minutes
David
of the show,
just Tourette's out in the middle of your middle of your ad.
You don't do it.
He'll
you
listen,
don't say
then.
It's at the end, or you don't say it's the middle. You say it's at the end of the show. You say in like last 20 minutes, they just really went crazy on your store.
It's the last,
it was nuts.
It was the last 10 to 20, maybe 40 minutes, and I don't know. So you just listen.
You'll find it. You'll find
Dude,
it.
Dude, I know for a while he was telling me because I'm like, here he's like, no, but Dalton listened and he said it was good. I know he was making Dalton listen and report back. To him.
Oh wow!
He's gonna have a different.
He has a studio ear. He has a studio ear. My local store got the. A aforementioned black box for Tomb Kings.
Yeah.
I cut a professional deal with my store I have decided that my wife and I are going together and we're going to make a joint Tomb Kings army as our next armies collectively.
Cool.
So I talked to Carlos, and to advertise the Tomb Kings in his store, the last couple of days I've been basically cutting them up and painting them up and putting them together and whatnot for the store.
Awesome.
As advertisement. I'm about halfway done with them.
So are you going to convert it into a Necro Sphinx or a War Sphinx? The one with a howdah or the one without?
Necro Sphinx, the winged one.
So wings.
One. Yes.
Okay. And that means also 10 Tomb Guard. That means...
No, there were no Tomb Guard in the box.
Oh, okay. What about those...
Sepulchral Stalkers over the Knights.
Over the Knights.
That's not a rules thing. That's a personal thing.
I agree.
I like the Sepulchral Stalkers.
Yeah, I do too.
I think I like the stats for the other one more, but personally, the model itself looks better as the Stalker.
The gaze attack is so cool, though.
I wonder if it's situational, but let's get into that.
Okay, we'll deal with
that
later. But I can say this, modeling-wise.
Yeah, Dave's giving us his gaze attack right now.
Made modeling-wise.
That's the come hither look. That's only for you, Aaron.
Oh.
All right.
That's not a pillar
of salt. And we're going to take a quick break that might last a couple of hours. We'll see you guys.
And not with me. It ain't going to last a couple hours.
Well, you said something earlier. Nothing longer than 30 seconds.
Oh,
that was in take one. That was in take one.
No, this is Garage Hammer. We're in it for the long haul.
Oh, boy.
Okay, let's reel this back in.
But I can say this. Modeling-wise, the black box didn't come with any instructions. You could get them emailed to you.
Okay.
And I kind of wish that I would have had them.
The instructions.
Yeah.
Really?
Even as a professional
they're
expert.
They're doing that
modeler,
more and more now because they're so complex.
Well, the problem slash coolness of these kits, because they're two kits with lots of shared parts.
Oh, yeah.
Which goes with
it
what?
Is, yeah, it, you got to really figure out what goes with what. Mm. And anybody who's listening that's going to put together the Sepulchral Stalkers, you have to pay attention to the tiny symbols on the sides of the upper body. because they're one set of them has skulls down the sides, mm-hmm. one set of them has little hieroglyphs down the sides.
Right. There's three and snakes, one of them has the
eyes of Nagash down the sides. Because you have to pay attention to those, if not, they don't quite fit. Hmm. It's not, and you won't know this until after you get the first one put together. I say this from experience.
Dude, I did the same thing.
Two of my stalkers have mismatched upper bodies that I had to kind of make work.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I bet we're going to be seeing a lot of that tournaments and stuff.
Dude, that happened to me.
You can't tell once you've got them put together when you get them filed down and everything, but it is unbelievably frustrating initially. Like, I'm sitting here going, I'm like, what the hell is wrong with this kit? I thought I had a warped sprue. You know, I'm like, literally, like, why isn't this fitting?
Talk briefly about the quality of the models themselves, though.
Fantastic.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They are really, really sharp.
Question-wise, did you see the guys who, if they do them as knights, the guys who are on it?
Yeah.
Did you just not like them?
They are cooler. Yeah, they are cooler than the picture says because they all have these little like goad hooks, G-O-A-D,
right?
That like you're looking like that you can use in the spare arm, like
the sort of thing that a Beastmaster would have.
Yeah, okay. Well, or if you position the arm slightly down some, you can almost I kind of fiddled with it. You could make it so like they're hooked. They're hooking themselves to the skeleton.
Oh, like worm hooks?
Like a maker hook.
Yeah,
that's nice.
No, I've got some of those.
The picture in the army book for that unit's really cool, and I think they look really nice on the Cobras. But man, those models—it is like you know, Tomb Kings are Serpent Now.
That's exactly what I felt. Yeah. I didn't. I was like, okay, I've really had enough of the Serpent Undead. Right,
exactly.
The hood on the hood part on the Cobra body, mm-hmm. you can't. In your last webisode, you.
That's what I said. How are you going to put something to ride on?
You
that
had
thing?
It talked like you could almost make them ride.
Yeah.
It's
Neil or something. Maybe.
Maybe if you had completely different set of skeletons. Mm. Like, it is...
So they're going to surf or
tough.
They're not going to be
They're
going
to surf or you're not going to use
yeah,
them.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. Okay.
In my opinion. Someone who wants to take more time and effort could maybe make it work, but...
I just couldn't see. I said, once the hood opens up that wide, I looked at the picture, I said, how are you going to fit something to strap around like a saddle? Because that...
Yeah.
Plus, snake's hoods open and close.
Yeah.
I was personally hoping that they would attach some sort of, like, not howdah, but almost like throne attached to the back of it that he could sit in. I don't like having them ride on the back. I don't like that.
You know when they show, like, the little saddle things they put on top of camels, it kind of raises a person
exactly.
above the hump.
Exactly.
So you could maybe do something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be a lot of work, no matter what.
Yeah.
But
it would be tough.
You should get him one of those, just like the three-legged stools, like sculpt a little three-legged stool, like, you know, from, like, the actor's studio, and just have him sitting on top, give a little microphone.
So he's chilling. I mean, but the thing was is that it had a lot of really cool bits on the sprues, lots of little, like, flying scarabs and things that you could put on the base or on them, and I actually ended up making up a couple of Desert Swarms using them.
I was going to say, you could probably use those bits for...
Little sparse for Desert Swarms, but they're a good start.
It does look better in person.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
I think that's really been the case lately. I mean, everything we look at, it's like.
Yeah. I don't mean to like go out tangent zone here, but there's a lot of these bigger kits, like the Abomination and the Spider for the Orcs and Goblins.
The Arachnorok.
The Arachnorok. And then all the
you have to say it with a metal voice. Or it doesn't work.
The Arachnorok.
See
the new Tomb King stuff. It seems like the big kits, and I do think it is the Games Workshop's photography and the way they paint these things, but they get a lot of flack. But then every time I see them in person, I'm just like, ooh, that, you know, daddy like. That's cool.
Exactly. Well, like I said, I mean, we keep saying, I said it when we looked at that, the first pictures we saw when they leaked the pictures of the Hell Pit, we all went, ugh. And then it's like, and then we saw the pictures on the GW site. It's like, okay, it looks a little better. I'm going to wait till we see the model. Then you see the model and it's built, and you're like, God, that's
every
that's
time.
The
Abomination
nice.
Is probably my least favorite of their big things. It just
really?
Doesn't look like anything in particular. It's just a blob that's
but
a rat. I'm uninspired.
I'm actually with as a lifetime Skaven player. I'm not a big Hellpit fan.
You know what? I'm going to come out in the defense of the Hellpit Abomination.
I'm not putting it down. Yeah. It's a personal preference.
No,
for myself.
I'm with
fair.
Chris.
It's
you either like it or you don't.
It's got a lot of really cool stuff in the kit. I have yet to see one put together that made me go, wow, that's awesome.
Okay. I think it was probably put together with a high degree of skill. It's just a matter of artistic preference. Since I'm not a Skaven player, I look at it and I don't feel a sense of love.
See, well, I didn't realize until I went back and read in the book that that's a giant albino blind worm that they took. It's a giant worm that they're stitching Skaven bits onto.
Well, it's a
rat
spawn.
Shape,
I can't think. I think okay, the brief of the model probably was, okay, it's a big Frankenstein worm thing with lots
it's the grand older design.
Crazy crap on it. I think they achieved that
absolutely.
A great deal of character.
But they definitely did.
That being said, you know, everyone's up, you know, has their opinion. That's fair.
Well, and some of it is also, especially on the pictures that GW had released, some of it is the paint job.
Those paint jobs I wasn't crazy about. The abomination.
Well, the second one that's not the one that they picture, the one they showed in like the battle reports and things like that, I liked that one more.
Okay.
Because I got the picture right here from the book, and it has less heads than in the book, but it does. I mean, I will say this: it kept true to this sketch in the book.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of that White Wolf, the Blood Brother, the Gestalts, or everything lobbed together, just body parts.
Right.
Yep.
The one thing, like I said, when they paint it, the one thing I don't like is if you look at the one, I think it's white body, but it's got the
lab
black,
rat looking one.
But it's got the black back portion to it, but the black portion comes up over all the Skaven heads. And I was looking at it, and it looked like I thought they were all Skaven assassins. I thought they were wearing cloaks, and the cloaks were stitched into.
What?
And I'm like, that's stupid. And I realized, no, that's just.
Some of it is also, like we were saying earlier, in a side conversation, we had discussed a little bit about some of the painting styles that have been showing up in the heavy metal stuff, and that, I think, in my opinion, that suffers from the same thing. It's very well painted, but the contrast between colors and shading is so stark and so cel-shaded almost.
So painting for photography, but not necessarily painting for the improvement of the model.
Exactly.
Okay.
And painting for, like, I think a cartoony vibe, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the Savage Orcs.
That's something
now,
I've been...
I will say this. Having Savage Orcs, the pecs look like they got two bricks stapled to the front of their chest. They are very blocky.
Are they really?
But the rest of the musculature is not, although it looks that way.
But a good paint job can soften that.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. They paint that hard white edge makes it look squared. I just got that box, like I said, from Canada, from Gordon, with all that Beastmen stuff in it. Yeah. And he had some of the new Minotaurs. And I'm not a fan of the new Minotaur. I don't like the furry sections. But the muscles, which I was expecting to be those muscles on top of muscles with the just... They're not nearly as bad as they look in person.
Yeah,
I thought the
Minotaurs weren't nearly as bad as predicted.
I was expecting
when I saw
them to be so bad.
I like the
upper bodies better than the lower bodies.
That's the bottom line for
the
me.
The legs are pretty awful.
I think I've said before on a different podcast my opinion, which is I don't like them very much. I think that I like a more classic-looking Minotaur. I want bestial...
Yeah.
I don't know what the word is.
They shouldn't have had feet. They should have had the cloven hooves with the back legs bending the right.
That's so funny. Now, okay, I go off periodically on my blog about gamers being pedantic. I actually saw a conversation about the Minotaurs where some gamers were basically rawing Minotaur design in a giant fight. It was almost like a fight over Dwellers Below or something like that, but except it was about whether or not Minotaurs had feet. Or if they had hooves, and there was like they were whipping out Wikipedia quotes and all this stuff.
Honestly,
I'm just like,
it depends on whether or not they're being mythological or referencing a D&D monster.
Exactly.
Yep.
And it was funny though, but they were taking this as seriously as like, you know,
we're talking about fact fighting fiction.
Yeah.
Right. Well, hey, I will say this: in the Unseen Lurker,
misbegotten child of Minos should have toes on his feet. Damn it!
How else are you going to get around the labyrinth?
Exactly, and eat your seven boys and seven girls.
Right, exactly.
Because you don't want
the seriousness of the look on your face.
You think I'm kidding?
What was it? Issue 6 or 7 of Unseen Lurker?
I was on that forum.
I was.
That's going to be my new domain name: misbegotten child of Minos.
When Wayne Kemp did the conversion in Unseen Lurker, it was issue 6 or 7. He tried to do a conversion to make use the Minotaur.
Seven.
Challenged him to do it. 7.
Fixing the Minotaur.
And fix it and kind of make it something for chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually said on the show, he basically just took off the legs and made it like a snake tail or a worm tail and put in little pustules and stuff. It looked really cool when it was
Minotaur
done.
Minotaur of Nurgle.
Yeah, it was a Minotaur of Nurgle. But basically he said it was a shame that the only way he could make that model better was to just...
Rip its legs off.
Basically, I mean, he couldn't fix the legs. He had to get rid of them and start from scratch. It was the torso on a peg.
Looking at the ones you had over there, it almost makes me wonder whether or not you could use the legs from the Ogre Kingdom's ogres. They got about roughly the same belly size and that same kind of muscular build.
You know, that's an interesting thought. They'd probably look a little better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah, we could put pants in those big metal metal boots on them, and then we'll put pictures in the forums that people can. Minotaurs shouldn't wear shoes. They would absolutely not wear shoes. No, I don't understand what the problem is here, but you need to fix that model really quick, mister.
David, you were on that forum too?
Yeah.
God, Brian, wow, everywhere. Chris, were you?
I'm afraid I haven't been on the internet much recently, but.
Toy soldiers, people.
Now
toy
you see
soldiers.
What you're saying?
I'm so sorry, I don't have an iPhone right now.
Toy soldiers. So,
well, speaking of toy soldiers, Brian, you've done some excellent conversion. Your modeling section was very good. Mr. Schmidt, do you want to jump in? You want to tell us what you've been doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I've just been getting kind of winding down from Adepticon and winding up for Midwest Rampage.
Yep.
I have a Warriors of Chaos army. And
yes.
I mean, yay. I
was dedicated to any particular god? For those of us that don't get to play you?
They used to be Slaanesh, but now they're kind of a mix and match because I'm
Chaos Undecided.
Chaos Undecided, exactly.
Chaos Undecided.
Now, I've
Chaos Uncommitted at the moment.
Chaos yeah. and I have an understanding.
Does that mean like Chaos on the Fence a little bit? Chaos both ways?
I butter my Chaos on both sides.
He's so... Oh, you're killing David.
I'm dying now.
Host down.
Piper down. We got a Piper down.
Well, so anyway, I went to Adepticon, and I need to turn my 2,400 point army into a 3,000 point army for a Rampage. So I've been working on getting my warrior, mostly a lot of painting, because most of the sculpting's done, and wrapping up some trolls, cast trolls I made based on the cast spawn kit.
Cool.
I'm allowing myself to get a little distracted with my next army for Warhammer Fantasy, which is the High Elves. And I'm super excited about this. It's very... Harrison, yeah.
Harrison's in the background. He heard the word High Elves just yelled out, woo.
So, yeah, I'm really excited about the High Elves. They're going to be cool. A little more sedate than the Chaos Army, but I'm really excited about it. Other than that, I've been also doing some work for Flames of War. Flames of War just recently released a Vietnam supplement, and I'm super excited
really?
About that.
Really? So I didn't know that at all.
Oh, it's cool, too. And I've been building a bunch of...
I knew that.
Oh, somebody get this guy a trophy.
I've been building...
Two bowling trophies.
And a present.
I've been building a bunch of terrain, mostly mostly 15-millimeter scale palm trees, but also...
Oh, wow, that sounds exciting.
No, they're cool. Hey, they're cool.
No, dude,
man.
I like building terrain. Don't cool. I know Chris hates it, but
no,
I actually
that's,
enjoy
that to me sounds like a bit like stabbing myself in the leg. How many times have you made palm trees? Like 15 times? I'd say 15 stabs in the leg.
No, I have 9 of them.
So 9 stabs, then.
Okay, 9 stabs.
I think that's a cool thing. That... You know, Cranky Lawyer would sponsor that. For every palm tree you make, Chris has to stab himself once in the leg.
Sorry, Chris. It's the rules.
Dude, he keeps giving us money for stuff, and as long as he keeps paying us...
I think you should drink urine. I think you should jump into a volcano. Here's $10.
Dude,
I would charge him more than
$10. Dude, he's a shout-out sponsor, man. You know, we got to do right by our sponsors.
When did the show become Most Extreme Challenge?
Stabbing yourself in the leg would definitely make you shout.
Cranky Lawyer's mean to me.
So that's basically what I've been up to. Lots of I'm trying to get wound up for some more tutorials for my site as well. That's,
okay, so you've got Midwest Rampage coming up in May, so you're going to be working on adding to your
Warriors
of Chaos.
Midwest Rampage. I'm also doing some terrain for the Midwest Rampage as well.
All right.
So those are the things I'm working on, and pretty excited about it.
Put some palm trees in that terrain.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking about it. Think about it.
Ouch, my leg.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. Yeah. So you're. My next tournament is the Invasion Kenosha one day, and then after that, I think the only thing I
need
got
to sign up for that. I want
to. Yeah,
go.
I got to get Harrison wants to be signed up for it, so he wants to play in it too.
So I gamed with when is Equinox?
This? What's it's like 2 weeks after Bits.
Yeah. It's what's the organizer's name?
John.
John. That's right. I had a game with him, and he was super cool. So.
He's
actually in our campaign.
I had my first campaign game.
Oh, that's right. You played him already. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and that's a nice thing now that we've, because while in our campaign, we switched over because we were meeting on Mondays and just doing all the formal, like, formation stuff on the map, and then everyone was, like, going home. So we decided to try to get our games done, like, 2 days ahead of time, and I would just call everybody, and since I'm organizing it, I would do it all from home, send it to everybody, and that way, by Sunday, you've got it, write up a list, and if you're free Monday... Then we don't have to meet at a certain time. Just get over to the game store, and we'll actually be gaming at the game store.
Get a game
dude,
in.
We had, dude, when I got there this Monday, there was that guy there who I didn't know who came by for a game because he saw they were having... It's like
are you talking about Ed?
Yeah.
The guy I was talking to?
The gentleman who was sitting next to me?
Yeah, he was the... Yeah.
I mean, I was there before you.
I had a conversation with him. Oh, okay.
And I don't know. I was like, hi, how are you? He's like, hi, I'm Ed. And I didn't know.
I'm just laughing because you're telling me about the guy that I was talking to
In general for the audience.
Okay.
I mean, there are people showing up to our game, and that's, I'm so happy. There are people showing up to game to for Warhammer Fantasy Night, seeing it on the calendar at UGG, and showing up. So it, as it's growing, so we were trying to move it over from taking care of campaign tactics only to actual getting... Gaming going in there. And Harris is all excited because he says if you can come out on a Monday, he wants to challenge you because he wants to take on your Warriors of Chaos.
Bring it, Harrison.
I never said the words being put into Harrison's mouth. I totally said earlier that you want to challenge Aaron.
I'm seeing a lot of reverse.
This is Aaron.
Gear.
You said you wanted to challenge Aaron.
It's too late, man.
Dude, he is totally lying. I am not pushing
Harrison,
him under the bus.
Normally, I push him under the bus.
It's too late, buddy. To push him under the bus.
Those two thumps you heard were the fourth and fifth axle of the bus.
What do you think? Feet or hooves for minotaurs? Feet or hooves for minotaurs?
Do minotaurs, in your mind, have feet or do they have hooves?
Hooves, he says.
Right. I agree.
Doesn't matter. It's not getting you out of your game.
Yeah.
It's go time. It's go time. You down. Yeah. But you got a Blackhawk shirt on, so that you win points.
Oh, man.
Yeah, speaking of American hockey.
I keep forgetting that I'm in Blackhawks.
Wait. There are no hockey teams in Indiana.
There is, but not at that level. Yeah.
At, like, skilled level.
Oh, you have no idea. I got this package from Canada with all this stuff that I did the trade for that I was talking about before you guys got
here. Yeah.
On Twitter, people are saying, "Oh, I'm getting my jersey on for this." And I'm like, "Don't you guys mean Blackhawks jersey?" So now I'm getting every time they lost, I was getting a "Ooh, Canucks." And Gordon keeps sending me emails and private messages about the Canucks.
What is a Canuck? What is it? It looks sort of like a shark thing.
Isn't that that hat that Bob and Doug McKenzie wear?
No, that's a toque.
Oh, okay.
That's crazy. Like, toque. It's a toque, you ignorant. Durr. You ignoramus. That's what you're supposed to have done when you eat back bacon, right?
I love back bacon. But the point is, I open up, and he even sent me an email saying, "How'd you like the packaging?" I opened it up, and instead of just being newspaper stuff to hold it apart, he had gotten some magazines, and it must be Sports Illustrated or something, but most of it was crumpled, except all the pages about the Canucks team going into the playoffs, which were nicely, gently placed flat, so as soon as I opened the package,
that's excellent.
There's all this Canucks.
See, we got to be careful, though, because by the time the show gets out, Sunday's game will have already happened, and if we talk too much, we're going to lose it.
At the moment, the Hawks are down 3-2. So
for the last two games, we scored 12 points to their 2.
Okay, shush.
It's what happened.
I know it did, but
it's in the paper.
Hey, can I be on your brother's show?
Yeah, probably.
You know what's really cool is when you take a game off to relax and let the other team score a whole lot, so then your next time, you win.
Are you cheering for the Canucks?
No, I've been trying for anyone who isn't the Hawks.
Why do you hate the Hawks? Because you're dumb. Because
I'm a Red Wings fan.
Oh, okay.
I almost wore my jersey just to make Jason Castaneda want to kill me.
And ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to welcome Irrelevancy back to the program.
I'm gonna loop this back into back to Warhammer because what?
Were you sculpting a Blackhawks thing under here?
Well, yes, but anyway, what Brian's talking about is totally valid strategy. I've been practicing that in Warhammer Fantasy. That's why I let Chris walk all over me.
That was excellent.
So when you play Harrison, you can beat up on a 10-year-old?
That's right, okay, man.
Speaking of beating up on a 10-year-old, I do have a battle report to talk about later.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
That's right.
Uh-oh.
Squeak, squeak. Ouch!
When he started playing, people felt bad about beating up on the 10-year-old. But then he got a little cocky. Uh-uh. Not you, because you've known him longer, but everybody else felt a little bad. But then Harrison won a few games, got a little cocky, talked a little smack, and now...
Harrison's one of those kids who pulls a win out of ashes. I don't know how he does it. He's just like, oh, now just roll like a superstar.
So he was playing against Grant that time, and he did the chain lightning, and he hit almost every unit on the board and killed his flying disc chicken man guy.
That's awesome.
And Grant was just like looking at the board. Oh, and he still brings that up. Like, Grant will still bring that up as the one time that it was just like, I can't believe that happened.
Yeah. I mean,
you'll look at Harrison and go, don't do that, dude. That is the worst. No, I'm going to do it. Okay, whatever.
I like
Harrison wins.
You go big or go home. That's how it is.
You can't play
like you know, you're afraid your little tin guys are going to die.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's why I play Skaven. We kill ourselves more than we kill you.
I feel bad that one of my Chaos brethren got taken out by the by the chain lightning, but I've never gotten that stupid spell to work.
Chain lightning? Well, you know, you should thank me for showing you how well it works.
No, you showed me how well the comet worked, and I am...
Go ahead. You're talking about a game, so yeah, it's great.
Well, is it my turn to talk about gaming? Well, you know what?
We're at modeling. Did we finish modeling?
I'm done with modeling.
I think we're good.
I just had a funny comet story.
Go ahead. Tell your comet story.
I had my
sidetrack? Tangents? What madness is this?
Tangent hammer.
Tangent hammer. Garage tangent. Anyway, so I had my game with for the tournament. Or not tournament, the campaign against the Beastmen.
Against Ryan.
Yeah, against Ryan. It's a fun game. And we had that sort of like combat army arm wrestling thing going on where one of us finally broke and then just, you know, my whole line collapsed. But I had my trick in my back pocket was I kind of had my sorcerer pull down a comet right on his own position. And I'm like, okay, you're going to eat comet, and I'm still going to lose, but it'll be cool. It'll be like, you know, the ending of Predator or something. Anyway. Now, this is like turn, I want to say like top of three, maybe bottom of three, top of four, something like that. Well, the game ended with five tokens on this stupid comet. Jesus, it never came in. And
so
I'm like,
that means strength... Nine
or something crazy.
Awesome.
It would have been cool, but it never landed, man.
I bought
all those special pills for my troopers, the Halley's Comet pills, and didn't work.
Now I smacked you with like three comets. Didn't I?
I know.
I was lightning the wall.
I was like, come on, man, really? Like, I've already lost. Why can't I take a bunch of this stuff with me?
Because it hurts when we get killed.
I brought the trolls to that one. Trolls rock. They did a good job.
Well, since we told a little side story, let's take a quick break here because it's been about 40-some-odd minutes. We'll take a quick break, come back, and we'll do reading and gaming because we got a lot of gaming stuff to talk about.
So sure do.
Take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
See you in a bit.
Groovy.
Okay, I'll place them here.
And wait, what are those again?
20 executioners.
Okay, well, then I'll place this.
What the hell is that?
It's a Chaos Horse Shrine.
No, it isn't. It's a half a corpse cart and an unattached horse.
Look, I know it's a half a corpse. I'm trying to make this conversion, and I'm not any good at it. So this is all I've got right now.
You know, you ought to let Urza's Den have a crack at it.
You think so?
Yeah, it's what Urza's Den does. Custom painting, sculpting, and conversions. And you know, Brian does amazing work.
But he's not going to want to do some single model conversion. It's just too small of a job for him to bother with.
No way. Check out urzasden.com and look at his work. Brian specializes in unique sculpts like this. You should go to urzasden.com and let him know what you have and what you want. He'll get back to you, and once you're both happy with the plan, he'll get that war shrine looking just how you want it. He can even paint it for you.
Oh, that would make my life a lot easier.
Yeah? And then you can focus on painting all these Chosen so I don't have to sit here looking at a ton of black primer.
Okay, let's not go crazy now. You know how long it takes me to get stuff painted.
Well, then let Brian do that, too. It's what he does. He's a pro. Your models will be beautiful, and it won't break your budget.
That's a good idea.
I know. So go to UrzasDen.com and send him a message and get the ball rolling.
Yeah, and then I'll have time to start building all the new Orc and Goblin models.
Ugh, for God's sake.
Okay, we're back. And into the...
And better than ever.
Back, and we're reading. So I will take the lead on this. I finished Wise Man's Fear from Patrick Rothfuss, which, Brian, you said your wife was...
My wife is addicted to that. A friend of hers showed her the first book. She devoured it, and then immediately I bought her the second one, and she just finished it. It's the favorite thing on her lip right now.
I heard about it on D6 Generation. Craig was singing his praises. It's one of those things where, you know, I told everyone about the first book before. You're at the inn, and there's the outsider guy who works in the town, and there's all the people telling the stories of the great old guys. You're just waiting for the wizard to come in and tell the guy, okay, we got to go on an adventure. And it doesn't do that. It goes completely left turn. I didn't know what to expect, but I was wrapped up in it completely. Now, I found it like 6-7 months ago. I found out the book was actually published like almost 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And it took him 3 years to write the second book, which I read in a week because I had other things to do. 1,100 pages, polished that baby off. And now I'm going to have to wait forever for the third book. And it's phenomenal. No elves and dwarves and orcs. There's like pixies and demon type stuff, or like the fae, and there's some supernatural stuff, but it's not like just wandering around in front of you. It's like hidden. So it's mostly just humans. And the story is so compelling. And I've actually read some reader reviews, like on Goodreads and stuff. And there are a few people who just like hate it because the main character is so good at everything, and it's like
the term I use whenever we're talking about characters that can't do anything wrong is the Drizzt Do'Urden. The guy who really shouldn't exist, that gets everything right all the time, that never can do anything wrong. At the end of this book, we know he's going to be waving the flag at the top of his enemies.
But this really isn't that guy.
That's what Sarah had said.
Because he's impulsive. He makes mistakes. I mean, his life is full of regret. In fact, the whole cool thing about the story is he's telling his life story because he basically realizes that his story, he's turning into the bad guy. People are. It's like if you read Ender's Game.
Yeah, Ender's Game.
Ender in the next book. Ender is like the villain of the universe.
Oh, that's fantastic.
He's becoming this.
God, and spoiler.
Well, no. I mean, this you get this in the beginning of the book. I'm not spoiling anything.
I'm joking.
But I can't say enough about it. It is my favorite fantasy type thing I think I've read since I've read Tolkien. It is that good. There were parts in the book where I was moved to tears for this guy's plight. And yes, he's one of these people who's got like a mind like a steel trap, so he's really what he's good at, he's amazing at. But he's got so many flaws and so many issues, you know, that it just makes him a real character. And it's I'm so amazingly engrossed. This is a book I will read over and over again.
This sounds cool. I'm going to have to print the show notes out for this show just because you guys have mentioned a bunch of really cool sounding books that I want to check out.
I love it. I finished that. I am reading the third book of the Sundering series. I picked it up at Adepticon Calidor. It's really cool.
Now, how are those? I mean, gamer fiction is so chancy.
Okay. See, this is precisely how I feel about most gamer fiction. I take it or leave it.
Okay.
I thought that the Malekith, I'm a biased reader. Because that's the sort of story I'd be interested in.
You
anyway.
Dig the subject.
I like the subject matter. I enjoyed
to
the
allow,
first write.
Like, you know, the chancy writing.
Yes. As far as chancy writing goes, it was more cleverly written than, say, a lot of the stuff you see in Dragonlance, where you just want to basically facepalm through most of it.
Mm.
It's like, oh, really? This is your choice of words, huh? You graduated fifth grade and you wrote a book.
Great. I will say this, personal opinion, the guys who write for Black Library are above that Dragonlance fiction level. They are good. Cool, the Horus Heresy stuff is selling millions of copies. I'm starting to read that, too.
Well, I know that Dave Abnett, what is his name?
Dan Abnett.
I know he's supposedly quite good.
Dan's awesome.
He gets a lot of...
Dan's awesome. Dan also does a lot of comic book writing. Actually, most of the Black Library guys, several of them are acquaintances of mine. They do a lot of sideline work. The Black Library is like their main gig, but they do a lot of comic book stuff. They do a lot of like other gigs on the
side. Nathan Long, Graham McNeil.
Aaron Dembski-Bowden is one of their new guys. I worked with him at Mongoose when I was still full-time over there. He left there to go work for a different company and then went on to the Black Library.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, like it's... They do a lot of stuff, and Dan's fantastic.
I would say if you like the subject matter, they're going to be good.
Yes.
I like the Nagash books. I would say of the three series, I've liked the Nagash books the best because Nagash is just so sick. He's just so...
He's bad news.
Yeah. I've really enjoyed reading just how sick and vile and wrong he is.
It is more fun. Speaking from a writing standpoint, it is more fun to write about a villain than a hero every time.
The Sigmar books...
I did like reading the Nagash series so far from what
I've read. The Sigmar books, I've read all three of them, and they were good. But knowing what Sigmar's going to be, it was just, to me, it was a little anticlimactic. I liked them, don't get me wrong, but it was good. This series, I loved Malekith, and I know Chris couldn't get through Shadow King.
Didn't like it, no.
I liked it. I like Alitha Nahr's story. He's like the Batman of the High Elves.
Maybe it's, I have no love for Batman necessarily, so maybe I just couldn't care less.
His whole family was slaughtered, his whole kingdom was destroyed. And he's just like, he's nuts. He's like angry all the time. And I mean, literally, like even his followers are like, really? We're going to cut off all their heads and nail them to this wall? We're going to defile this place like that? He's like, they've already defiled it. There's nothing worse we can do. Slaughter them and let them know we were here. And I'm like, ooh, God, I like this guy.
See, there's just nothing worse than a dark elf who thinks he's a high elf.
I like the cut of his
disgust. Well, that's kind of his thing.
It's nauseating. Yeah. I mean,
is the tragedy.
To thine own self be true, he is a Drukhai.
The tragedy of his story is he
will not call himself Drukhai. He says they are not true Nagareth.
Disgusting.
He hates them.
Well, no, no, yeah. no High Elf would ever call themselves Drukhai.
Yeah.
Drukhai or the Dark Elves.
I know. You're saying he is truly Drukhai. He's like, no.
It's that denial that bothers me.
But Kalador's really good. What's interesting is that you get a look at the High Elves where, I mean, when you see them on the table,
not a river in Uthwan.
Apparently, it's a river in Uthwan.
The High Elves fight for good, and they're all dressed in white, and they seem so noble. And you're just picturing the poetry loving, Greek sort of theme. And when you get into the book for Kalador, they're vicious. They're mean. There's a lot of politics. I mean, obviously that the Dark Elves and the High Elves are the two sides of the same coin. But in the book, I'm enjoying it because of the fact that you're getting that look at High Elf life. And it's like they really aren't. I mean, outside of the fact that the Dark Elves have given themselves over to this sort of debauchery and this sort of that hedonism that you don't see with the High Elves. But there's still all this other things there. They're
Caesar and Republic Rome, and the Dark Elves are Caligula Rome.
Yes.
That is a good analogy.
And you're getting that Caligula.
Caligulae?
Caligula. I knew someone of you guys was going to do. Oh my god!
So
Caligulicious.
Oh no,
that's fantastic.
Oh Christopher.
So I'm like,
I did that.
But if you like, it depends on what you like. Like I happen to love the dwarfs, and I started reading the Gotrek and Felix novels, and if you like Skaven, like I think it's the third novel. There's a bunch of it's them, it's the Skaven and Gracier Thankwell trying to sack Nuln and Gotrek and Felix just ruining it for them. If you like that type of character, you will love the books. If you don't,
it's the Gotrek and Felix pair up is I don't like reading those because it's the same. It's the Drizzt Do'Urden thing. It's the guys are going to win. We know that.
Yeah,
they're
Gotrek and Felix Rats Part 9.
Well, there's a great scene in one of the books that I was telling Christopher about where they have another Slayer with them, and they're going off to fight this monstrous thing, and he actually knocks Gotrek back and locks him into this place. And he's like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "The gods hate you. They're not going to let you find your doom. And if I'm with you, I won't find mine either." And he goes off and gets himself killed. And Gotrek is just losing his mind. "No, you can't do this to me." But yeah, I read somewhere the Gotrek's doom. Right now, the story behind Gotrek's doom is so large that it would take the end of the Warhammer world to have him meet it. It's just basically. It's just.
And
like,
now I'm praying for the end of time.
This is another musical episode.
Gotrek and Meatloaf.
Yeah, Gotrek and Meatloaf. We brought in Elton John and Tiny Dancer earlier. This is fantastic.
Yeah, this is the musical episode.
But yeah, it's like I said. I'm good. I picked up the first Ulrika the Vampire novel because I wanted to talk to Nathan Long anyway, and that she's an offshoot character from Gotrek and Felix because they've only met a bajillion people along the way. So this is a spin-off series. It's pretty cool, but
slick.
I will say this: if you like Skaven, pick up the Gracier Thankwell, the two books for him, because you really get a look into their. Their culture, and the second one, you actually get a look into the Lizardmen culture, and you get to see points of view of a Slan.
Oh, I heard you talking about that in one of your other.
It's very
episodes.
Uncomfortable it's to have Jim Henson's hand up your butt.
He's often thinking that too.
Oh my god!
In the Great Math, that Henson. If I could rearrange the reality with the Great Math, I will take away Henson's fingers.
That's right. The first 100 pages are blank because he's just meditating.
I'm really Frank Oz.
So that's what I've been reading, except for Dystopian Wars. I picked up the book for Dystopian Wars. I've been reading the rules. I am really jazzed about this. It is picture Victorian age. With steampunk, these guys go on an expedition to Antarctica and find this basically treasure trove of technological stuff. They're not sure where it came from, but they find it. They're like, "Oh, look, we're gonna bring peace to the world through technology and advance. We're gonna advance the world to a new age of peace." And of course, all the nations of the world see this stuff and say, "Hey, we could turn this into good weapons."
That's funny. Nobel thought the same thing when he invented dynamite.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so they. So basically you've got this, it's similar to, apparently, to the other two games that they do, Firestorm Armada and
Uncharted Seas.
Uncharted Seas, except it's steampunk.
Yep.
Very cool.
And I'm really jazzed to get some
going
on that.
What are the base sizes? What size do you know for when you buy the models?
Everything's different.
Well, it is not
There's no scale?
It's not uniform.
So doing proxies is hard, isn't it?
Well, I can't speak for either of these games. The one thing about Firestorm Armada that I thought was neat was that it takes a proper science fiction spaceship game type of approach where the peg of the base is where everything's measured.
Oh,
from.
Everything's on a point. It's like it's like the old
occult arms.
Okay, that's it.
So I don't know if these games work that way because they're not like emulating things being thousands of miles away from each other, shooting at each other or whatever.
Okay.
But like I said, the fluff behind it is fantastic. I'm really interested in the books. There are 8 factions listed in the book, but there are only 4 that have any stats or army stuff listed for them.
So that's a cue for a supplement.
Yeah, they're going to have to.
To put it in better terms for Chris, they make references to the quote-unquote retribution of Syrah, those sorts of things like they did in
War. Understood.
Understood. Here we go. I'm going to do this. Like we did in War Machine.
There you go.
That's right.
That's
right.
Brian Steele's like.
But then the books for those armies will come out much later.
Yeah, I noticed that Beast 9 is using the paint scheme that I chose 10 years ago.
Who?
Beast 09.
I don't know who that is.
It's one of the character Warjacks who's got a bone color Kador jack.
I knew who it was, Brian.
I must admit I have fallen out of the circuit in talking about a lot of the War Machine stuff. I have.
That's right. Well, my influence can't be as cool as yours. So.
My focus is elsewhere.
Oh,
I just accidentally did that.
That makes me furious.
Thank you.
That's a Wormahorde's reference.
Nice. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Sorry, I like Malifaux.
I'm trying to get all those puns out there. I'm just trying to cast them all out.
Stop.
So that's reading.
The choices being basically England, Prussia, Japan, or the United States.
America.
What?
America.
America. The Federated States of America.
States of America.
That's right. So
I want to try it out. If you ever want to give a game a run, let me know.
I am absolutely planning on giving this.
Firestorm Armada is a lot of fun.
I'm going to try it, but then rage quit.
You're actually Christopher's going to do better than he's going to one up. He's going to say we're going to plan the game and everyone's going to show up except Chris. He's just going to text us. I'm rage quitting now before he's going to rage quit before he gets there.
I'm going to text?
Yes.
No. Chris is not going to rage quit. He's going to emo quit.
But right after he I'm not playing
this game. Wow. I asked you to buy one stinking box of Warjacks and you wouldn't. Screw you.
I don't need you to buy Warjacks. I got plenty of War Machine players.
Yeah, I know.
I still need you to commit to that Kings of War game.
Oh, I'd like to play it.
But that was reading.
That was reading. Anybody else read?
I'm halfway through the Hunger Games series.
Yeah, that's another one I want
to
check
out. My wife read them and loved them to death. And so, like, you have to read these.
As did mine.
So I've read the first one. It was fantastic. I'm about halfway through the second one, and it's doing pretty good. And then next up is the brand new Horus Heresy short story anthology. Starring Dan Abnett stuff. there's a bunch of different authors from Black Library in there, but I'm really looking forward to Dan's contribution in there.
Cool.
It looks fantastic.
You know, I just realized why I have a lot of trepidation about the some of the Black Library stuff. These stories you are describing sound cool. I think that I read 2 books that they gave us at Adepticon one year. Mm-hmm. And I read the Warhammer Fantasy one, which was pretty cool. It was, but it was kind of a short story, actually, about a wizard who's trying to track down another wizard who becomes a follower of Slaanesh.
I like where it's going.
Yeah, it was a good story. I mean, it had the nice darkness and just completely brokenness of chaos, which is the way that really worked. Then they had a 40K book called Ravenor, and I just couldn't get into it.
Ravenor? Was it about a Tyranid?
No, it was about a... That was problem number one. It was like... It was a Inquisitor named Ravenor, I think. I don't know. I read the first chapter, and it was just... It felt like the writers from, like, CSI.
Okay.
got here's a vague outline of what the Warhammer 40K
world
looks like.
Don't worry, Inquisitor Ravenor. We'll get that doggy out of the tree.
Seriously, it had that vibe
what
about it.
What we have here is heresy.
Exactly. Oh, my God. It was...
Does he whip his glasses off before? Here, what we got here is... Take off glasses here.
heresy.
No, it was. It was like they're just like, hey, can you
sense a blaspheme?
can you write a book? Here's an outline of the Warhammer 40K world, and you know,
I would like to say from someone who has tried and is continually trying, it takes more to get onto the Black Library. Sad face.
Oh,
I think though that. This sounds like a situation where maybe the Black Library has had a couple of growing pains. This might have been one of their sort of,
yeah,
one of the books that they'd be happy to just sort of let fall to the side. Because generally, even though I don't enjoy these books as much as other people do, I would say that their choice of words, their choice of language is a bit more adult than you would see in other game-related fiction.
Mm-hmm. It honestly depends on the books, too. There's one particular series in the 40K line of books, the Caiaphas Kane novels. They're fantastic. One of my 40K buddies turned me on to them, and they're non-chronological, so they're a series, but they're not a series. You don't have to read them in any particular order. In fact, they reference each other, kinda.
Okay.
It's about basically a commander who has become a hero of the Imperium, almost by accident. He's become what his legends or what the grunts have been telling him about him, only because he's just managed to survive this long. And he's kind of, on the inside, he's kind of a coward, which is, he's a commissar, and he's kind of a coward.
That's funny.
But because he's a coward, he has to fight that hard to survive, thereby surviving these unbelievable instances and becoming a hero in the eyes of his men.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's his memoirs.
Now, we're talking about the kind of commissar that would still shoot his own men in the back of the head if they ran away?
He doesn't like doing it because it's another man that can take a bullet that's not for him.
What okay. a poser.
That sounds awesome.
If he had to do summary execution, he would. But
that's what's going on in his head.
Absolutely.
That's funny.
But it's if I shoot this guy, that is one more orc bullet that could hit me.
Oh.
So... Huh. Instead, I will look like the magnanimous commissar, and my people will love me that much more.
Right. I appreciate that.
He's a great character.
I like that. That works.
And it's a fantastic set of books. Sandy Mitchell writes all of them, and it's awesome.
That's a great protagonist.
Yep, absolutely.
I have to say, this is not necessarily from the Black Library stuff, but in general, one of the reasons I enjoy Games Workshop and things like Warhammer so much is when you do get into the storyline before you get into the army book, their command of the language is so solid, so strong. As an example, I was reading through the Demons of Chaos recently again, just for the fun of it. I literally had to look up three different words. Obstreperous? What the hell does that mean? I had to go look it up.
What does it mean, Chris?
It was used in conjunction with the Great Unclean One. I believe the sentence was, the vociferous and obstreperous Great Unclean One, basically sort of a gregarian nature, a happy-go-lucky.
He's happy in his filth.
Right, exactly. Oh, well, I mean, it made sense within context of what you already know about, you know, Father Nurgle, but it was fun to actually take my game book and have it teach me a new word. That is awesome.
Yeah.
That's the sign of a good author.
No, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Or a bad book.
The Demon book taught me a new word, too.
Did you know what it meant beforehand? I sure didn't. I admit it freely. I didn't know what it meant.
I didn't know what it meant.
And that word was humility.
Oh, okay. Wow. Another sad face.
Another sad face.
Yeah. Sad radio emoticon.
Speaking of reading and learning new words,
yeah,
anything else for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I skip, much like my painting projects, I kind of skip around to books, too. Mm. I do a lot of game book reading, not unlike yourself.
For sure.
And honestly, sometimes I'll just get ideas for mechanics for games, and I'll kind of just plug them into other games or just read up on stuff. So I was rereading the Confrontation rule set, which I have a copy of floating around.
I've never read it, believe it or not.
It's a really cool system.
I know that it made a lot of people upset when they went from true miniatures to plastics. But
yeah, that was lame, to be honest. I never collected the game or played it much, but I bought the book, and I thought it was a really interesting set of mechanics.
There's something there to be played.
It has a cool card-driven mechanic set as far as how unit activation works. I think it's very intriguing. It has a lot of potential. I don't know how that would, say, match up to something like Malifaux, but it's something I'd actually like to try the rules out sometime.
For Confrontation or Malifaux?
Both, but okay. But Confrontation, because it's a kind of dead game now.
Have you ever taken a look at AT-43?
Yeah, AT-43 is a similar mechanic, I've heard.
I really like AT-43. Yeah. I've got several armies for it.
I've heard very good things.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about that one, too.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're in friendly company when it comes to dead games.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, we talked about Warzone, you know.
Exactly, and Chronopia.
And Chronopia.
Oh. Two of my favorite games. Yeah.
I've got a copy.
I still have my miniatures, so.
I have a copy of Leviathan, which was the Chronopia's...
That was the large scale.
Yeah, Chronopia's predecessor. But anyway, other reading. As I said, Flames of War has been kind of ramping up on Vietnam, so I have been rereading We Were Soldiers and Once We're Young, which is a fantastic book if you're into military
Ambrose?
History. No, it's Moore.
I don't think I've read it then.
Retired Colonel Moore. I don't know what rank he was when he retired. It's basically it's a story about it's his account and one of the and a journalist who's there's account of the battle in the Yadrang Valley, and it's the very first use of the full mobile air mobile troops in Vietnam by the United States,
the air cav, so to speak.
Yeah, the air cav. Okay. It was like the first full like implementation of that idea. It's a very good book. It is heartbreaking and
well,
heart-wrenching.
Like we said, anytime you know the end, it's...
It's a fantastic read if you're into military history.
I am for sure. That's actually the last... Rather than reading regular fiction, mm-hmm. that's kind of what I've been reading. So
I read a lot of history in general. On the nonfiction front, I loaned my girlfriend World War Z, which is a fantastic book.
So good.
And it was funny because I was hanging out at her house, so she was like cooking up some food to take for her lunch, and we're to hang out with her over the weekend. I started rereading it, and then I was kind of like, man, I want to take this back home with me, but I loaned it to her.
If you ever get the chance, grab the audiobook,
mm-hmm.
because Brooks got a bunch of star voiceovers.
No kidding.
Mark Hamill, Henry Rollins.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Henry Rollins, no kidding.
And they're perfect. They're spot on.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And because he's got all these different like professional actors, the stories that when you read the book, it's easy for you to kind of like transpose someone in your own head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know exactly who you're listening to.
Yep.
In the audiobook.
That's
it
cool.
is fantastic.
Neat.
I didn't realize that was Mel Brooks' son, and that he used
Mel
to write
Brooks
on
son.
Saturday Night Live. Yeah. I mean, I remember he wrote that first, the Zombie Survival Guide, which mm-hmm. was like kind of funny.
Yeah.
But this
World War Z is like it's just one of the top favorite books. It's so good.
It's not.
It's
I read
amazing.
It. It was frightening. I was.
It's amazing.
It's like, amazing. It's horrifying.
I know you haven't read it, Chris,
fantastic.
But picture if the zombie revolution really happened and 90% of humanity was wiped out, and we can't really get rid of them. They're still kind of here. That virus is still here.
I hit a zombie brick wall a couple of years ago.
I don't know,
you
man.
Guys are all. But
You might have to give it a shot. And
I'm just saying, I play a lot of video games. I've seen a lot of zombies recently,
but it's nothing like that. It's written from a guy who was supposed to be writing a report for the UN, and they didn't want all the real life reports, like the people's stories. They just wanted stats.
Yeah.
And so he basically compiled them and put them together. And late at night, I put the book down. It was by myself. I hear noise outside.
Give you the willies,
And it did. It was creepy.
Well, here's the thing about that book. And if you're into nonfiction, you should also check out a book called The Good War by Studs Terkel.
Okay.
And it's basically a series of interviews that he did of World War II vets. And World War Z is based off that book as far as a model.
Oh.
Yeah. It's basically, pays a beautiful homage to this fantastic book about the Second World War. And that's what Max Brooks did, is he used that as a model for a way to retell the zombie apocalypse.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah. No, they're both really cool books. I highly recommend it. And like any good zombie story, World War Z is not about zombies.
Yeah, it's about the people.
You know, it's not about zombies.
Fair
zombies
enough.
Are like the environment. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they're almost
that's true. That's the zombies are the setting.
And it's cool because you get these people's stories, but then you learn about how the zombies react and the things that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, just the whole telling of when one, like they're pretty silent until they sent a human.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start making noise. And when one hears it, it starts making noise. And it could set off a chain for miles
mm-hmm.
of them just all coming toward that first sound. And it's just like, Oh, yep. And then when they freeze in the winter, and they're like, oh, they're frozen, they're dead. Because when the liquid in your cells freezes, it crystallizes and rips your cells apart. So you won't, no, they thaw and keep coming. You're like, no, wait, no.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that part was horrible.
It was, the book was frightening.
That book has so many geeky moments. Yeah.
The part where the people, the one dad is smart and he goes up north to go live and they're kind of camping out and everything's fine at first. That was a part of the book that really made me almost physically ill.
Yeah, it was heart-wrenching. Yeah,
and that girl is starving to death, and the dad finally gets her food, and you know exactly where
that came from.
And I'm just the humanity on the brink.
Yeah, no, that's why it's fascinating. Zombies are, as you said, Chris, environment. You know, I'll quickly wrap this up so we can move on. But the last thing I've been reading, and I kind of owe this one to you, Dave. Is while I paint, I listen to and sculpt. I listen to podcasts, you know,
geez, so do I.
And when I've blown through every gaming podcast I enjoy, I've been starting to listen to
HP Lovecraft Literary Podcast.
HP Podcraft.
That is an awesome show.
So good, it's so good. And I was like, kind of like, I don't know, but then I started listening to it, and I think their production value and the people they get to read and some of the literary critical points they bring up are fantastic.
Yes,
it's such a good show. So I've started rereading. I started rereading Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath,
which is a hard one to get through. But
I love that story.
It's just so bizarre.
Much fun. Yeah, it is a hard one to get through, but I love it. That and I think Mountains of Madness are my two favorite.
I just remember the first time I read Shadow Over Innsmouth, and you're reading it. And it's like finally you're getting to the end, and it starts to click.
That's another one of my favorites.
Because I'm sitting there, get away, get away, they're coming, get away. Mm-hmm. And then, I can't believe that's what I'm. You
know. I like the voice talent they got for the Yig stories.
Well, you know, and they've got a lot of the guys who do that are really not only really into Lovecraft, but they're a small production company. Yeah. They produce
they
films.
They know what they're doing.
Have you seen the black and white?
I saw the trailer of it.
It's awesome.
The trailer was really cool.
You can get it on Netflix, and I think you can get it streaming on Netflix.
It's on Netflix.
They may have like succeeded with the Manhattan Project that was making a Lovecraft movie that didn't suck.
It was
you
fantastic.
You know what I mean? It's like they split the atom.
I mean, what's his name? The guy who directed... Del Toro.
It sounds like it's not going to happen, dude.
I hope it happens.
The Hobbit will probably happen, but...
That's already in production.
I posted the 10-minute... production video on my Facebook.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll have to friend you and check that out. I wasn't aware of it. I've been a little out of
my students touch have been telling me they're going to be putting out a weekly video about and I'm like, I don't want to see the whole.
I feel like it's impossible not to get some sort of spoiler.
Well, here's the deal. That first production video is spoilerless. It's him running around saying, "Hey, check it out. These are a bunch of dwarf feet on a wall. Check it out.
I love that stuff.
That's different.
I love the behind the scenes stuff.
Six months from now, maybe we'll start seeing some stuff that maybe you might not want to see.
Right. Yeah.
But right now, it's all just. It's showing the world that yes, this is happening.
Oh, okay.
Which is what they need to do at this point.
So I could be wrong about the Mountains of Madness, but I've got a group of friends in Michigan who follow that stuff pretty closely, and it's from what I've heard, it's probably not going to happen.
Well, once again,
I could be wrong. If anyone out there in podcast land knows better, please let me know.
Well, and like I said. Turning Lovecraft into movies is so hard because they never have that sort of movie type of ending because they're these weird short stories that, I mean, even in The Mountains of Madness, it's like, I know how that book ends and it doesn't necessarily make for a good movie ending. And if you change it, then the only people who really want to see it, the Lovecraft fans, in a similar kind of thought train,
I know Chris is probably not even remotely going to having seen it. Have you seen In the Mouth of Madness?
I did like that. Yeah. The John Carpenter movie?
Yeah. It's very Lovecraftian. Obviously not a direct story.
He said
but
it. Yeah. He took it all his cues from Lovecraft.
It is in my top 15 movies.
Really?
As a writer, any movie that has writers as the protagonist kind of jumps up my list.
Well, I like just that whole, have you read Sutter Kane and watch it? I remember
the coffee scene with the guy walks up.
Brian, you're right. I know nothing about these movies. I was just thinking that you and David probably need to get together and watch all the crap movies in the world, and you guys would be delighted.
But
chances are very good.
I actually was joking around with my friend Mark, who couldn't stand J.K. Rowling, and anyone who knows me knows I'm a big Harry Potter fan.
Okay.
That's what I kept saying. I'm like, this is that Sutter Kane series. She's going to take over the world.
I am going to start to put the hammer down on this conversation pretty soon.
That's okay.
Wait, which hammer?
The Warhammer.
Oh! The Garage Hammer.
Yeah. I don't know.
Set
that was good.
Point.
Thank you, thank you.
And I did like, just to wrap up the issue, I did like Reanimator.
Yeah.
I liked Reanimator.
It's classic.
Yeah. I mean, it changes the book a bit. It's campy, but it was a lot of fun. It's the first time I saw Jeffrey Combs in a movie, and I love him. So.
Yeah. No, that's a classic.
All right, so
it's barely unnameable.
I liked it because there were new people in it. I mean, that's about the only reason I saw
you
that.
You moved the microphone away from your face, so
nude,
all we heard
nude.
Oh,
there was naked
folks. I
thought
you said no people. I'm like,
boobies. Huh? I liked the movie for the boobies.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Otherwise, I don't remember much else. I remember that some guy chopped some other guy's head off. And
that was awesome. Okay, so I guess we're up to game.
No, we're not.
We're not.
What's next?
I have to do mine.
Or are you reading?
Oh,
hi.
I'm sorry.
Hi, I'm on the show. I'm the host.
Have you read?
Don't get bitter. I could have sworn you said you didn't read. I didn't. Okay. Back up. Let me reset. I'm not saying you can't read. I could have sworn you said you didn't read anything.
Let me just do my section.
Okay.
Ugh. Ouch.
All right.
Brian, should we leave these two alone? They need to.
He gets so angry.
No, so anyway. All right, so what do I have? What have I read? Maybe nothing.
Oh, my God.
No, so I've been going over the Kings of War rules because, like I said before, I'm going to be doing a demo in July, so I'm trying to get some games going. It sounds like we've got a pretty good thing going on in the background, too.
I needed Snake Eyes to stand and fight my one lone survivor. I rolled box cards, so I ran away, and then I rolled the Snake Eyes.
Okay, so Taz needed insane courage to not run. She rolled a 12, and then to run, she rolled the 2. And Harrison, being the nice opponent, laughed and shook his fists in the air in triumph.
Nice.
The niceness of a 10-year-old when you play against him.
Well,
right,
he's 10.
So let's get back to your reading, because I'd hate to skip it or ignore you in any way, shape, or form, my good friend.
What a magnanimous guy. Thank you.
Glad I'm wearing my boots.
So anyway,
I finished that sentence because it's a kid's show.
I think this turned away from being a kid's show at some point earlier
today.
Kings of War, I haven't been able to sit down for a game yet, but I've been doing the Theory Dojo stuff in my mind, trying to figure out how the game is going to be playing. I'm looking forward to giving it a try. Other than that, I am working on going through, obviously, the Tomb Kings when I can get my hands on the book, which means I got to go to the store and just read. And I'm flipping my lid. I can't wait to try these guys out, and I'm sure we all feel the same way. But I want to go into more detail on that when we can all have a discussion about it.
Yeah.
Because I think we've all got something to say about what I've read from that.
Sign me up for your Kings of War demo. I really want to participate.
The nice thing about that is you've got high elves, which means you can just put elves on the table.
Yeah.
The warriors of Khaz can pretend to be whatever. But, there are 5 armies right now. I think if I'm going to summarize it, it looks like, the game's pretty streamlined compared to, like, Warhammer.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have as many moving parts, but a lot of the game's going to be dictated, I think, in the movement phase. Because once you get into a combat, it's going to be kind of a slugfest back and forth.
Yeah, there's a difference between elegant and simplistic.
Well, I think it's elegant.
That's what I'm curious to hear what you think is which it falls.
I think it will be elegant, but it is currently simple, and I think it will need a few tweaks here and there to give it more of an elegance.
I totally think Mantic. I just love what they're doing. I mean, I've been a little bit hard on some of their miniatures in the past as a sculptor.
They're definitely one of those companies that draws a line in the sand, and people are going to find themselves on one side or the other.
Yeah, those new orcs they've got coming out are great, and I like that they're publishing a new game.
And the game I think looks interesting, but I think as far as like someone like you, Aaron, who. Because of the fact that you don't take models off the tray, this is my unit, and that's the unit, is that you have so many opportunities with their game system to make a little diorama.
We discussed this last episode, and I agree completely, and I think it's something that's really fun, is that if you're just going to commit to playing Kings of War, for example, and you've got your 20 guys, rather than just glue them together and... You can have dynamic poses and have them spilling from one to the next and have it look like a guy is rushing forward with spears, for example.
You can make your unit filler, like, actually not filler. It's, like, dynamic.
You can make your zombies an actual graveyard.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to giving it a try. And, of course, the Tomb Kings I'm hyper about. I am hyper about
them. Yeah, I'm a little.
They look awesome.
They do.
In your eyes when you were reading that book. I mean, I wish I had a camera with me because Christopher was priceless. I haven't seen that look in your eyes, I think, since we were like about 18. I mean, you looked like a little kid again. You were so happy. It was ridiculous.
I was impressed by the Orc and Goblin book. And the Tomb King book is just like more goodness.
Yeah, I like that the Orc and Goblin book. I think that, and I'm going to predict, I think that they're going to end up smack dab in the middle of the pack in terms of, like, if we're going to go by camp tournaments.
Okay.
I don't know. I think
power level. Right.
I think at the power level, they're pretty balanced.
Yeah.
I don't think they're over the top.
I kind of talked a bit about this on my site and just in a recent post.
Plug your site again because I don't know if that got cut out or not in the time warp.
I have a site with it's a lot of sculpting and sort of projects I've been working on, but I also talk a bit about gaming and sort of the Warhammer and other games I'm interested in, communities. It's zenite.wordpress.com, and Zenite is spelled xenite.wordpress.com. Go check it out.
We'll have to make sure that gets in the show notes.
Absolutely will be in the show notes.
But I had made a post. I was just kind of talking about some of the new trends with these Games Workshop books. Hmm. And I think, based on what I've been hearing, like, you know, some of the other podcasts, like Dan Heelan and the guys over at Bad Dice talking about
the Bens
talking about the Orc and Goblin book, it sounds awful lot like, you know, Games Workshop starting to get a clue and trying to put, like, create a bit more balance.
I agree.
While trying to keep their armies characterful.
What do you think?
And I don't,
I agree.
And I did not think that what I was reading the Tomb King's book, I mean, the good glance I put in it, and nothing seemed like it was going to just be like, oh, yeah, here comes Demons Part 2, you know what I mean?
No, it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah.
I agree completely.
And I think that's a good move for them, you know?
Yeah. It's refreshing, and it's fun because it's so good for the hobby in general.
Yeah. Well, I feel like this is something they're kind of clipping onto, and some people I know will argue with me, and I hope you guys don't get hate mail over me saying this, but I feel like Skaven were pretty in the median, too, a little high on the in the medium zone, but they weren't like...
I'm not sure I agree. I think they're higher than medium, but...
You think so? Okay.
I guess I do, but...
And also the Beastmen. And I know people are going to say, "Oh my God, you're crazy! The Skaven are insanely powerful, and the Beastmen blow." But
well, I don't think they blow.
The Beastmen are winning tournaments now, and
they
and
are Skaven, winning tournaments.
And Skaven's tendency to, you know, blow up on you is
well, the Skaven are super powerful, but they can't blow themselves up.
I think it's just turned out that the Beastmen were not a quick study army. They were an army that you had to
write
on paper. They look worse than they are. Then you sit down to play them, and you realize, if I take advantage of this core unit, or this core rule, Bestial Fury, what's it called?
Yeah.
Primal Fury.
Yeah, Primal Fury.
If you can take advantage of it, you've got what makes the High Elves and the Dark Elves so powerful, and you get it every turn if you can just keep that leadership going.
My last game, I had a real hard time against Beastmen, and I don't know. I will admit that I may be just wishful thinking here, but I have a feeling that these latest group of books are going to be pretty fair.
If they continue along the way they have been, I would agree. It sounds like they've got a good team cranking out these books at a good pace.
Yep. Well, I mean, in Orcs and Goblins, nothing seems to be under-costed, so there's nothing that you just take. I have to have this because this is pure win. But nothing seems to be really over-costed either. It just seems to work. Oh, nice. You just pulled out your Mangler squigs.
Yeah.
Nice.
Is that what that's going to be?
That is a Mangler squig conversion
to
be used as prize support for Blood in the Sun.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
Giving that and some other stuff to Grant from the den. So
this is great.
That
Brian
is cool.
Just whipped out this model. That's it really is a great rendition of the Mangler squig.
I whipped out my Mangler squig.
That's awesome.
Hang on a sec while I whip this out. anyway, and it really is the best part about this, Brian, is that he's got a little goblin back here.
He's a fanatic.
A fanatic hanging onto the chain that the two squigs are attached to. That the squigs are traveling in opposite directions, like they're spinning around, which is a very smart choice.
Which means you know that that poor little goblin is going to go everywhere.
He has no
eventually
hope.
At the same time.
It's like a walk.
A 6-year-old taking a mastiff it's for like a walk.
It's like walking.
Or two of them.
It's like, go take the blender for a walk, you know?
Oh,
like, wow, that's
that
awesome.
Beautiful.
That's tight. Dude.
It was the one thing that jumped out at me when I was looking through the Orcs and Goblins book that very first time.
What would be fun to do?
Well, I love Fanatics anyway. I'm not an Orc and Goblin player, but they're like my favorite. The little swirling looties. They're insane, and I think they're neat. They're a neat little thing that, you know, a lot of the power gamers are going to be like, yeah, but they're throwaway points. Yeah, but you know what? Screw you. You're fun. They're fun, and I love watching them. And if they kill half my guys, then I enjoy it.
Yeah. As a current Bretonian player, there is nothing in that book that I fear more than that Mangler Squig. It's like, that will kill a bus.
Yeah, yeah. You don't. I mean, if you don't have something.
And you know what I like about this? This is going to force people who are taking just three big block units to break those smaller and take throwaway units. You need a 50-point unit of throwaway to move it on top of that Mangler Squig.
You need your Chaos Hounds or your five Harpies.
Need some dogs.
Or
you need an Eagle.
I agree.
You need something.
I agree.
Because when they throw that thing at you, you need something cheap to
give
up. You
do not want that to hit your Blood Knights.
If you are going to be playing.
Exactly. You don't want it hitting your Chosen. You know,
or even in
a tournament setting, if you think you're going to be seeing those things, you absolutely have to have that 50, 60 point.
You know who
hate
them more than anyone? High elves.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's where the eagles come in.
Yeah, but they always take the lore of life. It's like, oh, I'll just bring them back.
Well, to be fair,
50 point eagle, a 50. Yeah, 50 but you need four of them now.
Yeah.
But to be fair, the thing about the Mangler Squig, and I just from playing against Orcs and Goblins at Adepticon, it wasn't that the Fanatics and the things like this thing, it's not the damage they do, it's that you are sitting there going, huh, I can prevent the damage by not moving my stuff. And that's, anyone who's played Warhammer Fantasy Battle knows that's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's that you can prevent the danger by crippling your army.
May not do anything, but they have the potential to wreak havoc.
Absolutely.
And once again, now that the 8th Ed books are coming out finally, that some of the things you've been seeing that people have hated, I can't take this, I have no need for a unit of five dogs, I have no need for a unit of this, no need for a unit of that. You almost want to look at Jervis just kind of sitting there smiling going, don't worry, it's I know, I got it covered.
You know what? To be fair, I didn't run the dogs once in 8th edition until I had my game with Chris.
That was the first time you fielded them?
That was the first time I fielded the dogs.
Way more than once.
Yeah. Oh, they were great. They were just like, here's the cheap hassle.
Just Chaos Pooches.
Like,
like a 30-point unit of five
Chaos Hounds. I was like, man, what have I been thinking? Because they're just so good for just, here, get in the way for a second. Help me set up a charge and also the extra deployments, which
you did outthink me a little bit because I didn't bother with much archery. I didn't think it was going to work against warriors.
Yeah, so.
And once you bring them in there at that angle, and that's what Chris does. I know you haven't played him, but I think you've played him.
Yeah.
He'll take his eagle, stop him an inch from your unit at a 45-degree angle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you either charge this
at that angle
and twist so I can hit you, or sit there and do nothing.
Yep.
Have at it.
Yeah, and
I want to kill him every time.
Chris, you're an artist with those eagles, man. I'm starting his high elf army. I'm like, yep.
Consideration.
Chris, let's have a chat. Like, help me out. That's cool.
That's what those dogs did too.
Yeah, that's.
I was lucky. I was able to
them.
Take a couple of mounted yeomen, and I was sort of able to play the game back at you.
Yep.
But
that was a fun game.
Yeah, it was a good one. Listen, guys, we might want to consider taking a quick break.
Yeah. Let me ask this. I mean, well, we just have the gaming section. I have had no games because I've been running the campaign. I haven't gamed.
The only one I have is the campaign.
You have the campaign game, but I know we've got so much modeling to talk about, so much of this other stuff to talk about. Do we want to? Do you have any games you want to talk about?
I'm trying to think. I've been working so much. I played some 40K recently.
Are we got our hearts set on talking about these games right now?
I told my comment story already, so
I wouldn't mind talking about the brief game I had against Harrison.
Well, why don't we do that then, and then take our break? Because then we'll finish the modeling, gaming, and reading section. We can come back from
before the break.
Yeah,
okay.
We took a break in here. We took a break only 35 minutes ago, so.
Fair enough. Well, let's see. Obviously, I've had my third game against Harrison for the campaign.
Uh-huh.
He was playing as Skaven. I was playing the Bretonians again. If I can remember, Skaven had an A-bomb, of course. This is the first time in 7th or 8th edition I've had to face an A-bomb, and that thing is a pain in the ass. Let's see. A couple of big blocks. Let's see, at least one big block.
He didn't just take the the obligatory fire banner. What's it?
He did, or I did?
Did you?
I don't need to.
Apparently
I'm Bretonians.
You do.
No.
Remember? No.
Bretonian archers pay 5 points.
5 points.
And the entire unit is flaming arrows.
Nice. And that still gave you trouble, though, the A-bomb.
You know what gave me trouble was that I didn't kill it on the charge.
You have to do a wound, don't you?
Correct. I need to do at least one flaming wound before that thing
is
going to come back.
That's where the archers kind of let you down a little
bit. Shower the thing, yeah. With arrows.
You're able to do enough wounds?
All I cared about was doing at least one. Oh, but I did have that flaming banner in my unit of 14 Knights of the Realm.
I guess my question is, why was... Okay, so it was a problem. Why?
It was a problem because... The way I see things with a big block of knights, you kill it on the charge,
mm-hmm.
or you're stuck in combat. Mm, if you're
stuck
in combat,
thing,
you
yeah.
probably started losing your block
yeah,
of knights,
yeah.
and I didn't kill it on the charge.
Oof.
In fact, long and short of it was he had a big long line. Of course, he did have the obligatory little engineer with his doom rocket. He had a level 4. Now, what was it he had? I don't think he had a bell or a... Plague Furnace. I can't remember.
No, he didn't have the bell or the furnace. He just had blocks and blocks of guys.
Blocks and blocks of guys. He had two of the Warp Lightning Cannons.
Ouch.
Yep. The Grey Seer. With
two Warp Lightning Cannons?
Two.
Ew.
Yeah, that's...
That's bad news for your lances, too.
Yeah.
Because you got all these knights lined up, and it's like... Nyeh.
They're perfectly shaped for this.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah, yeah. It was rough. Well, let's just say...
Lance formation for... Never mind, I'm not gonna say.
I think he had two units of the slaves, the guys that explode when you... When
Yay!
Oh, lordy. Storm Vermin and...
Oh, there was not a better target for your trebuchet, though.
There were a lot of targets for the trebuchet to choose from.
Well, you can't miss, you know.
I needed it. No, my first couple of shots had to go against those warp lightning cannons. Nothing was more important than taking those things out.
That's a shame.
I had to.
No, fair enough.
I mean, I had to. It's that or, you know, a big long line of death and a template.
Yeah.
Because together that is Wild Stallions, and it kills Bretonians dead. flamethrower guy, I think. Oh, no. It was the plague...
Plague Claw?
Not the little guy. The little weapon attachment.
The mortar.
Yeah.
That cool. thing
is awesome.
That thing paid for itself in one little shot that I'll tell you about later.
And it's like 65 points, so man, it works. Oh, sure.
On my side of the table, I had a unit of, I believe it was 3 Peg Knights. Don't leave home without them. They are very, 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 very good.
I don't mean to spin this back into our game, but the Peg Knights versus the Hellcannon matchup was amusing. Those Peg Knights...
They somehow managed to survive the whole game until the very end. Yeah.
They caused me a lot more trouble than I think you realized, Chris, because they were just there, and I was not able to be like, here's all my army up in your face, which is the way Wars of Chaos really need to play. And I couldn't do that, because I had to, what am I going to do about the
monstrous cavalry.
The crazy. Hit like a brick, and they fly.
It's the flying part that was the problem.
Yeah.
You made a good point in the podcast about that river being a giant pain in the butt.
That river made a big difference.
And that river was like the Peg Knight's best friend.
Yes. Well, neither one of us wanted to cross the thing because, you know, this one causes death.
Mm-hmm. Splash.
Yep, I didn't realize because, I mean, the forest's like one is bad, but the other one is nothing.
One is nothing. Two and three are bad.
No, one of the six is nothing.
One of them
is bad, and the other two or three are really, I mean, you cause fear. Nothing.
Well,
but the river's always bad.
Do you guys always run in the special terrain in all your pieces?
In the campaign, we've been running
back
just,
and forth.
About two-thirds of the games that I've played, we've done the special terrain. And honestly, I've been willing to try because it's kind of amusing. Anytime I've had an opponent who didn't want to use it, I'd never had a problem with that. I'm like, that's cool.
Our general house rule is we roll how much terrain you're supposed to use. Yep. Obviously, if it's a watchtower, you put the watchtower in the middle, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And then you roll a die for every piece of terrain. If it comes up a 6... then that piece of terrain is a piece of special terrain. And then
you
go to the
opposite.
Table.
Nice. Okay. That's not
that
a bad
way,
system.
That way it's not a table full of wacky crap.
Yeah.
Okay.
And occasionally it's like, oh, hey, there's a Sphinx. You know?
The table full of wacky crap is my problem.
Well, we don't do special terrain, but we just do goofy. We just do, but the forests are always mysterious. That's basically.
Well, and that's, we make it so it's random.
Okay.
Otherwise, they're just forests.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mysterious, but two through five is non-mysterious. It's regular plain old.
But like other pieces of terrain, like the building isn't suddenly a brewery. It's just a building.
Unless you happen to roll a 6 at the beginning of the game, making that, let's go roll on the building table.
Oh, okay. See, we haven't done anything. Like anything that's not a forest has pretty much been just the forests have been mysterious in our games.
Yeah, we throw the terrain out, and then basically you just roll a die for each piece, and if it comes up a 6, then the corresponding table that should go with that piece of terrain.
It becomes an effect.
You
yes.
roll to find out what it is.
Yeah, it actually makes more sense that way. I like leaving it that way because otherwise then it's just in your way because it doesn't block line of sight. It doesn't really slow you down. So, I mean, I like it, but I know I'm in the minority on that, so...
I think it's fun thing to add flavor and to make for a very fantastic fantasy game.
Mm-hmm.
But occasionally, I think it's nice to just sort of go, "Hey, look, we're fighting on the this sort of like traditional battlefield."
The most recently, my wife's I think her only loss with her Westeros Bretonians was against High Elves, and it's because in the very first turn of the game, the level 4 High Elf wizard person got. Lore Master from the Sphinx got the Lord of Death. And so now he's got all of the high magic. You know, he's got all his high magic spells and then all of Lore of Death. He had like 17 spells.
I may be wrong about this, but I also think that matchup is rough for the Bretonians. She had a
hard time, but it also in all of her games, she's fired her trebuchet. She has one currently.
Two is the magic
number. She has fired her trebuchet, I think, 7 or 8 times, and it has not misfired, like, twice. Hmm. She's just had bad luck with it. It's not
the trebuchet is prone to misfire. It's just
enter the next game with a completely fresh frame of mind, because it just depends on the game.
Yeah, exactly.
But speaking of trebuchets, I did take 2 for this one.
I think you're right. You have to take 2
I
of
think
them.
You have to. I'm not saying that the Bretonian book is bad. I'm saying that it's limited, and if you don't do that, the only other option is to take a really big block of Grail Knights, and that gets very expensive.
As a fun gamer, I don't use the word have to unless the Codex tells me to.
You're right. You don't have to do anything. But there are some problems out there that you should expect people to take.
With the Bretts, if you want to be able to hit hard enough to soften them up enough that you're taking
so many cavalry out there that if you don't do something to reduce the chance that they're going to be steadfast...
I don't think the sentence is with the Bretonians. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but I think it's a lot of the time I would say you have to take this, and the rest of the sentence is to be competitive in a tournament scene.
Exactly.
Yeah. But... with the Bretonians, I have a feeling it's...
You should.
You have to take this if you want to play a game that you have some significant versatility, I think. But I guess you could probably argue that.
She's taking one.
You've
got to
have some kind of impact.
Right.
But, I mean, like I said, she's got a winning record, and she's only taken one. With the exception of one game where she proxied a second one.
But
like my play clock catapult.
That's a good...
I might add.
But would you go into that without... would she?
Hey, you guys, you're married now, right?
Oh, for 12 years in November.
Well, see, what's yours is hers.
But my question is, would she consider really taking a Brett list with no trap?
She has initially before we bought that first one.
In 7th edition, you could do it.
I'm just saying, I would not see myself building a list for Brett's and not put one in there.
You know what? Other than just making my Demon Prince be a big coward and hide behind a building all game, other than that, the trebuchets didn't do a ton.
They did a lot in the first 2 turns. I was able to actually hit three times, and the rest of the game they did.
That's right.
But early in the game when
it matters, they messed up some of my chosen.
The chosen were...
Yeah, my small chosen unit. I guess, though...
It made a difference against the Chosen. Yeah. I was actually able to wipe out the Chosen in combat, which is
saying something. And that essentially broke up my line a little bit more. So, yeah, that probably was okay.
I would say they helped.
I think they helped. I think they probably did their job.
In conjunction with the 3 comets, the Warp Lightning, the Pegasus.
Warp Lightning.
Well, not Warp Lightning.
Listen to you, Chain Lightning.
Squeak, squeak, Bretonians.
Well...
Rats on horses.
They like cheese.
The tree I'm barking up is that I think your magic phase was what was really causing you trouble.
I would agree with you.
That magic phase sucked. Oh, my God.
So how'd the rest of your game go with Harrison?
With Harrison?
I mean, I know how it turned out. I was here, but...
I took, what is it, a 14 block of Knights of the Realm. I took a block of about 6 Grail Knights. I took Knights Errant for the first time in 8th edition, which I don't normally take. But I wanted to just give it a shot, just to do it.
They're cool.
They're all right. It's impetuous is the problem.
Problem?
Impetuous means that when you can charge, if you don't want to charge, you may have to charge anyway.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Frenzy.
Yeah, no, I don't see that's a problem. Your cavalry, you want to charge.
Not on the first turn.
He doesn't want to get out in front of his whole unit, and if they don't win that first charge and win, they're going
to
get killed
this
the
way.
Second turn.
Have you
I, just,
looked,
I was playing
have
against...
Have you looked at the FAQ on them for impetuous? most things in 8th Ed, the have to charge if you can charge,
yeah,
is only if it's with if you have a target within your movement.
Within your movement?
Within your base movement stat.
No, I thought it was within your charge range.
I don't think that's
range.
True, man. That's your charge range.
And your charge range is your movement plus 12.
You know what?
Because if you can charge, if you could successfully charge,
yeah, I don't think
you have to.
We can look it up on the break. Okay. So okay. Maybe that's yeah. That's up for at the time of the game, the rule in my mind was such that I was playing it under charge range.
Okay.
So those are the parameters that I would have played at the time.
Okay.
To complicate the thing, I also took the standard called the standard of errantry, which means that they get plus 1 strength on the charge. Another
Ooh,
thing is strength
excellent.
6.
Yeah.
But they got minus 2 in that impetuous roll.
Oh.
The very first thing that Harrison does is go scuttle, scuttle, scuttle with his great big warp, you know, his abomination, and it's well within charge range.
Oh, well, yeah, and I could see where the impetuous would be a problem in the case of charging something you definitely don't want to
right.
charge.
And that's the issue. Now, on my first turn, we're talking about my deep right flank and his left flank. That's where the A-bomb is. Now, I've got two units that can probably charge it, Knights Errant and the Knights of the Realm. And I'm pretty, like, I need to roll a 6 and I need to roll a 7 on two Steadfasts. No big deal.
Yeah.
But I didn't do that.
But that didn't happen.
So the Knights Errants go, yeah! And they charge right in and they don't care about terror because they're impetuous.
Mm.
And the Knights of the Realm said, nah.
Oh, so they didn't even have anybody to back them
and
up.
And they were the ones with the Flaming Banner.
Oh. Okay, I can understand.
And that. Now we got a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I charge in. And it goes first, and it goes
crash, stomp, smash, stomp, stomp.
And I lose a couple of guys of my, I don't know, 7 or however many guys there were. I lose a few of them, but I did charge, and I did actually manage to actually cause a wound or two to stick. We bounced. Now it's turn 2, and he gets to go, and he goes stomp, 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 and I'm decked down to 3 guys, and I don't really cause anything, and I need snake eyes, and I roll snake eyes.
Yay!
So I should have lost him, but they actually stuck it out. So by my turn 2 or 3, I was able to get the Knights of the Realm in there with the Flaming Banner and my Lord with the ubiquitous heroic killing blow sword and the a billion attacks. And
the sword or the virtue?
The sword that I took provides 3 additional attacks. From the lore of heavens,
okay.
Harmonic convergence means that I'm get to reroll ones. So I hit with nearly anything.
Okay.
And then all it takes is one single 6. And I roll 2, 2, 2, 3, 3, 3.
Well, to wound, not to hit.
Well, to wound is the killing blow. But yeah. I'm saying my strength is only 4, its toughness is 5, and I rolled no die higher than 3. Whoops.
Oh, no.
With like 6 dice. So I took a couple of more casualties, but at this point I was able to hold because, now I've got lots of ranks and I've got multiple standards. Meanwhile, on the other side of the board, my Pegasus Knights managed to fly all the way around. My trebuchets are launching rocks at the warp lightning cannons. I was able to kill one. It was able to kill one of my trebuchets. And my Pegasus Knights are like ready for the next charge against the warp lightning cannon when his unit of storm vermin turns around, and so does his little plague launcher guy. Plague launcher guy goes, fine, I'll just lay a template right here. Mike Harrison, are you sure? Because you're going to need like 5s to wound. And he's like, yeah. Rolls 2 5s. Okay, that's 2 wounds. I take one guy away. I'm like, well, gosh, man, Harrison.
Are you talking about the poison wing?
The little poison guy, the little weapon team.
It doesn't actually have a strength.
Right, that's why you just need 5s to wound. That's what it says. If it's under the center, it's 4 to wound. Otherwise, it's 5 to wound on that little template.
Yeah, because it's the poison wind mortar, because it's gas.
It ignores
so
whatever you normally do.
It ignores
just
everything, and it just the gas explodes, and if you roll a 5, they take a wound.
Wounds on a fixed number. Any single model that lies under the direct center of the template takes a wound on a dice roll of 4+, with no armor saves. All other models touched by the template take a wound on a 5+, with no armor. So we were right, yeah.
Okay.
That's the way it works. He landed the template, it scattered just enough for it to hit 2 of the Peg Knights. And so he's like, he rolls 2 dice and 2 5s. I'm like, oh, well, you know what? 2 ward saves. Okay, 1 and 2. I'm like, oh,
well,
you just killed a Peg Knight. Good job, man. He's like, oh. And so I took one model away and I stared at it for a second. I'm like, you know what? That's 33%.
Oh.
Okay, 2 dice. Boxcars. I'm like, huh, I'm right by the edge of the board. I guess I'm flying away from you. So no matter what I roll, I'm gone. It's like that little guy just scored like 250 points.
Yeah.
So Peg Knights
awesome.
Were not noble this time around.
I just adore this game. They either fall apart on you completely, and then it's somebody else's fault because those unreliable somebody screwed the general over. And if it works, if all the pistons are firing, it's just
they're
a 65 point guy just
oh my gosh. Yeah. Meanwhile, my other trebuchet is finally able to take out the second warp lining cannon, so I've got those guys. Those problems are now solved. So I've got one trebuchet left. My archers are about to get charged by a whole bunch of angry rats. Some slaves are now charging into what's left of my gigantic block of Knights of the Realm and my three Knights Errant and the Hell Pit Abomination. But by turn four, I'm finally able to do 1-6, and the Hell Pit goes, and it disappears because I was able to do Flaming Wounds to it. So that means that the slaves are just disintegrate after that.
Yeah.
And suddenly I've actually got two blocks that haven't been killed. Oh, I forgot to mention, though, that for the time he did have his warp lightning cannons, they more or less just entirely picked on my Grail Knights. So what's left of them is, like, one sorceress and one Grail Knight champion with, like, covered in soot, and they just run to the corner of the board. Screw this. They're just going to wait. They're going to wait for the rest of the game.
That's awesome.
Magic was good. I did manage to launch a... what are they called? The Comet a couple of times, and Harmonic Convergence was a godsend.
I'm trying to remember which lore is the Comet from?
That's from Lore of Heavens these days. The Bretonians are very limited, three lores only to choose from. At the highest, at level four, you can take three lores, and that's Heavens, Life. Yeah, pretty much. Beasts, Heavens,
beasts
and life
are the two. I didn't know they could have Heavens.
You can only have Heavens if you're that lord level.
Oh.
The hero level can only take life and beasts.
I don't think my wife knows that.
Only at the lord level, but take it. I really strongly recommend it. It gives the Bretonians that ranged punch.
Wait until she's playing someone else, though.
Beast is terrific, too, because if you cast it on your own guys, you get the bonus, and that was really nice. Basically, it's the signature spell. You boost up your horses, suddenly they've got strength and toughness of four. Humans with that are pretty good, especially on the charge. Once I was able to route the A-bomb, once I was able to take care of those two warp lightning cannons, I was able to start making a route. And that's the way the game kind of went. What are you looking at, my friend? Oh, the Dreaded 13th spell?
Dreaded 13th spell.
He did try the Dreaded 13th spell a couple of times.
I've never looked at the Skaven book very carefully.
I've only ever gotten it to work once.
I'm playing the Handsome Man tomorrow, so I got to...
Expect it.
I got to...
That's definitely part of his...
Yeah, you're meeting him at the Battle Bunker, aren't you?
Yeah,
he just invited us
to
the Battle Bunker at 10 a.m. because I guess you guys are going to play and then there's other people coming to try.
Oh, rats. You guys have fun.
Yeah, I can't. I've got ballet. I've got three kids and it's Saturday. I've got too many
kids. I've got my kids at my mom's house, so I'll have to...
Yeah, I told them. I'm like, I don't think we can make it. But I guess there are going to be some people trying out bits scenarios, too.
Oh, cool.
Neat. Yeah, I'm going to try to get a couple of games in, Grant. One to talk some green stuff and also try his scenarios out.
Cool.
All right.
Cool.
Well, that was it for my game. I'm going to be playing.
How did it wind up?
Wound it up with, I think I was 16-4, or was it something approximately 16-4?
14-6.
14-6, that's it. I did well. I did well. I didn't do as well as I did against the Warriors
of
Chaos. Don't even look at me with your eyes.
I was shocked because, well, what else is he going to look at you with?
His feelers.
Whoa. Yes.
that's it.
I went upstairs to
know.
Cook because it was that really warm Sunday we had, like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that one.
Well,
really warm.
It was, and then the whole next rest of the week, it's like snowed 2 days later. Boy, I was pissed off. I pulled up my shorts and everything.
The Midwest can bite me.
Where are you from?
The Midwest.
Okay.
Mother Nature can suck a fart right out of my backside.
That is how I know. Like,
but so I'm out there. I'm like, I got to go upstairs to grill, and I swear to God, I looked at the board, and I'm like, Harrison did it again. Harrison has got another game down.
That's the way it felt at turn two.
Harrison
like,
is going to win this. Harrison's turning this around because I had a win and a loss. Harrison had one loss, and I thought, or no, that was his first game. I had a win and a loss because I had started playing with the Skaven. Harrison took over. I'm like, Harrison's going to turn it around. He's going to be win, win, win. I go upstairs to Cook. I'm like, how'd it go? And he's like, oh, I lost 14-6. I'm like, how the hell did that happen?
You know, when you say 14-6, what do you mean?
Oh, I'm sorry.
There's a differential in points. It ended up being about a 500-point difference. I scored about 1,000-something. He scored about 500-something in terms of victory, in terms of points killed.
The way we do it when we score, we kind of score it. Like, I actually like this. It's some of the European tournament stuff they do, and they do it around here now, too. But basically, if you draw, the game's out of 20 points. And
okay, so it's tournament style. It's Massacre, Major, Minor.
If you draw, like I think we have it set at 100 points or 150 points, it's 10-10. You each get 10 points.
Okay, yeah, all right.
And then as the changes, you can get up to 20 zip, although in our game the loser never goes below 4 points because you use those points to spend on the campaign.
On the Empire points.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So,
because it's campaign.
Because even in the old campaign, if you lost, you got a point, and it went between 5 and 1. But we changed it to more of the tournament style, so...
Okay.
Yeah. So that's so you.
And my next match is against the Empire, so I've got to deal with cannons.
Oh, and Tom posted on the forums. What do you guys think of taking for the third campaign? Because he doesn't want to take something other people are taking, and he's trying to find.
Who Bertold is?
No, I'm not. Sorry, John. John wanted to know who what everyone was taking.
Because Equinox posted that
he's not going to take Dogs of War again. He's looking for. He wants to know what other people are taking because he doesn't want to. He doesn't want to take something other people are taking.
I can respect that. I like that.
You guys still allow Dogs of War as a legal force?
Yeah. There's actually, you know, I use the independent grand tournament rules for the Chaos Dwarves.
There's another one for Dogs of War,
which is well written.
Is he using it?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's really cool, actually.
Witch Hunter characters are neat.
Yeah. Yeah. But so he was asking what people were going to take, and Tom Bertold wrote the Creamy Nougaty Empire.
Nice.
Gosh. Okay, so if you're done with your game, I don't have a game to really talk about. Did anyone else want to talk about a game, or we want to take a break here, and then we'll come back and... I got to do the tournament report, and then we can get into Tomb Kings.
Tomb Kings and modeling in general.
And modeling in general, because I know you guys have a lot to tell, and I have a lot of questions, actually, because I don't be so good at this.
Not me. I don't even want to talk or look at you guys anymore.
Okay, so Chris is leaving.
Pariahs, bro.
No,
pariahs.
I'm giving you a silent.
And eventually, once...
I'm only going to talk to David's fans from now on.
eventually, once Harrison and Taz's games end, they're going to come... Speak to the pants. My zipper has something to say to you, my friend.
Oh, whoa.
Bow, all right. Bow, bow. And on that note, we're taking a break.
All right.
Good morrow. I am Alitha Na, known to some as the Shadow King. When I'm not ambushing and beheading the foul Drukhai, or wandering the forests of Ulthuan, bemoaning my fate and that of my family, I'm usually listening to Garage Hunter. All hail the Phoenix Prince.
Hello, I'm Deckard Cain, and you're listening to Garage Hammer. Stay a while and listen, because it'll probably be a while.
All right, and we are back. And before we get into talking about Tomb Kings and all sorts of modeling and sculpting, it's time for our tournament scene updates. And as always, our first is the shout out from the Circle City Circuit with the big update on what's going on there. So, Chris, take it away.
Hey, guys. Lizardman Jeff here with another update from the CCC. Once again, the forces of chaos have wrecked the land, leaving the world a smoldering mass. But it was demons that won the day. John Cashin is currently under construction, Demons of Chaos Army, bested the rest of the field for his first circuit win. Though this army is currently in the works, John is an amazing painter and has done some really awesome conversions. Many may recognize his work from Adepticon 2009, where he won Player's Choice with his Empire army, the Republic of Errazo. We had an excellent turnout for the being wedged between Adepticon and Ard Boys, and we hope to see more at our last two events of the season. For Round 5 on May 14th, we will be returning to the Southside Game Preserve with our 2,700-point and now for something completely different tourney. For full details, check out Circle City Gamers at CircleCityGamers.com, home of the Circle City Circuit. Also, congratulations to all you Ard Boys Round 1 qualifiers out there. We Indiana Ard Boys look forward to seeing you next round. All right.
Okay, and what else is coming up? Now, that's Circle City's coming up next.
Yep.
And, of course, anyone who's on our forums or anywhere around us knows that on July 9th and 10th is the Blood and the Sun tournament.
Bits, that's right.
The Bits tournament. Grant is actually, I thought he was going to stop by tonight and talk about it, but he is seeing Chris Cornell tonight.
Okay.
So he asked us just to talk about it. Guys, you've heard about Bits. Go to the website, bloodandthesun.com.
Getting me out there. I'll definitely be there.
Check it out on our forums. Chris is going to be out there. Lots of people are going to be out there. And get your, if you haven't signed up yet,
now's the time.
Now's the time, because right now they're waitlisting people, and it looks like they might actually be expanding it to another room.
Yeah, if you want to be a part of it, now is probably the best possible time to go ahead and just jump on their site and actually make yourself heard, because the more people who show their enthusiasm and actually get on board, the more likely they are to be able to expand this and to allow a larger tournament.
Yeah, because I know Grant sent out an email today saying they've only got 3 unpaid spots left. So if you get in and pay, you can bump whoever's not paid. If you don't, you're on that waiting list. But, I mean, there's going to be other stuff going on there, too. I mean, Grant's got – isn't there going to be – aren't you doing the
– the Kings of War is going to have a demo there. I'm going to be running that. And as well as – I'm sure plenty of pickup games. And,
sure.
As well as tomfoolery. There will be haberdashery, tomfoolery, and
– and shenanigans.
Shenanigans galore.
So that's going on. And then the last tournament on our list
in snarky one-liners
is two weeks after that, the one day, July 23rd, Invasion Kenosha 3. That is going to be a great one run by our friend John. Lots of fantastic swag. There's
The swag bag apparently is gold.
Is sweet, yeah.
Gold!
Okay. But there's going to be some sort of 40K stuff going on there.
It sounds like there's going to be, correct me if I'm wrong, there's like several different things. Is Flames of War going to be at that? 40K.
I know there's 40K. I know there's the fantasy is what Harrison's going to be
sure
in
about
that too.
Flames of War. I talked about Flames of War with John briefly.
Maybe that's what I heard.
And,
then I definitely 40K. Definitely fantasy.
There's going to be a significant both painting contest for miniatures and terrain.
Excellent.
Of some sort, I believe.
Well, that actually promises to be a real treat. I'm going to try and make both.
And it's one day. I mean, the sign-in's at 8, and it's done by, like, 5. I mean, you can go out there, and you can still go out for dinner afterwards. And I'm just excited because there is
or
so much.
Or just a sensible snack.
Or a wacky snack item.
Garage Hammer's brought to you by Wacky Snacks.
Wacky Snacks. Hell yeah, I want some wacky snacks.
Eat snacky s'mores.
Happy Tarts.
Happy Tarts.
Put Happy Fun Ball back in a Happy Fun Ball containment unit.
Do not talk Happy Fun Ball.
Oh, my God, and it's not even really late yet. So,
it's a floor wax and a dessert topping.
Check out Invasion Kenosha 3. They've got invasionkenosha.com or else just check it out on the tournament forum on our forums page. But that's going to be that is a really fun day for everybody. So, and we'll both be there. Harrison will be there. He's actually signing up. He's going to be playing in the tournament. So you can go and try to kick the butt of a 10-year-old or be embarrassed by a 10-year-old. Either way,
depending on how he rolls that day.
Yeah. So that's great. And that's pretty much the tournaments that are coming, folks. If you've got upcoming tournaments,
not to mention. The Midwest Rampage.
Oh, Midwest Rampage is coming
Midwest
up?
Midwest Rampage is coming up on May 22nd, I believe. Let me double check
So that's
that.
Before all this other stuff. But if you have a tournament, if you're listening to this show and you have a tournament out there, and I don't care if you're here in the United States, I don't care if you're from England or Australia, I mean, there's other people around you who are probably listening. Because if you've got a friend you play Warhammer with and you're listening to this show and they're not, then you're not doing your job. Get them listening and promote your tournament here.
For heaven's sakes, do your job, people.
Come on, you all have homework. I'm a teacher. You have homework. You have to come back next week with two listeners. Two listeners next week, or 2 weeks.
And what you did over your Warhammer vacation.
Episode 24, the big one-year anniversary show, is coming up next. Lots of big prizes to give away.
I thought that was
this is episode 23.
Oh.
I totally miscounted when we were talking.
Oh, okay.
But this is still going to be a big, awesome show because you're here and you are awesome.
Well, thank you. I was just... Is this on? Right?
Yeah, you're on.
You're on right now.
I wasn't sure if I hit the button or not.
No, yours isn't on. Just say all sorts of crazy crap.
Watch it.
Okay, if you I've got the Midwest Rampage information if you'd like to.
Yeah, go ahead, say it.
Hit it.
Midwest Rampage is a 3,000-point Warhammer Fantasy Battle tournament. And this is Midwest Rampage, I want to say, 6th. And it's May 21st and 22nd.
So go ahead and say it.
And it is...
Say it like you mean it.
What?
You said, I want to say it, so I said, go ahead and say it. But if I have to explain the joke, it obviously wasn't any good.
Silly English teacher.
Anyway, Midwest Rampage is being held May 21st, 22nd, 2001. Limited space will also be available for open gaming on the 20th.
Can you read it like Christopher Walken?
And
I'm kind of creepy.
It's at Grafilia's Aerie.
It's at Grafilia's Aerie.
Grafilia's Aerie.
Come down.
At 309
the tournament.
North Main in Bloomington, Illinois.
Please, it's Illinois.
You might meet my friend Chuck. Chuck from the Wagcast. But that's the worst Christopher Walken ever.
It's the Wafcast.
It's
oh boy.
It's the Shoecast.
Okay, so before we move on to talking a little bit about Tomb King, since we all read the book,
yeah,
I do just want to say I want to give a shout out because he might actually be listening to Pat from the 11th Company Warhammer 40K podcast, because apparently one of the guys, one of the new signups on our forums, said, "Hey, I heard about you from a 40K podcast," and I said, "Which one?" Mentioned us, and he said, "Well, they didn't mention you." I emailed him looking for more podcast. I said, "Well, which one?" And he said it was Pat from 40K. So, hey, Pat, and the rest of the dude, they have like 6 or 7 people.
Hey,
on
how
show
about
too.
Them 40K?
So Neil, the guy who runs the show, Larry, Cheatin' Steve, and Pat, who is fantasy curious, so he started listening to other shows. So come on over to the square side. We have cookies.
Square basers do it better.
Cool.
So
I confess I've never heard the show, but I'm not a 40K player. But guys, thanks very much for the support. I appreciate it. I listen
to more podcasts. Once I've listened to everything on every podcast I've got, then I just go searching for new ones. That's kind of what happens. Oh, and there's another Blunt Force Gamer. He plays at the Battle Bunker, Blunt Force Gamer podcast. He talks about all sorts of games, and he's actually in the Chicagoland area, and he's friends with the guys from Zlurpcast, Johnny P. and them. So they've signed into our forums.
What is the Zlurpcast?
Zlurpcast is...
what is the Zlurpcast?
It's for Blood Bowl.
Oh.
They're the guys who run the...
So they're the guys friends with the other guys.
Yes. Okay. Guys friends with guys.
That's great. Well, guys, thanks for...
Well, they actually ran the Blood Bowl stuff over at Adepticon, too.
I should send them pictures. I actually just got done... I did some life-size Blood Bowl trophies for a guy in Washington.
Chaos Cup,
oh,
Spike,
cool.
Which one?
Yeah.
Actually, a Skaven Cup and a Nurgle Cup.
Nice. So
post it on our forums, because Johnny P. is on our forums now, and I'll definitely see him then.
I have to get permission from the person
the Blood Bowl guys, the Zlurpcast, they are local?
Yeah.
I do want to do some more Blood Bowl.
Yeah, in fact, listening to their show got me to join the NAF, and when I got my dice signed up for my year, you get the Blood Bowl dice that comes with when you sign up for a year, and it was like postmarked from here in the city. I was like, damn, that was fast. How'd it get here so quick? Oh, they...
Because they live next door, and they just walk
They
over.
Live like 15, 20 minutes from the Battle Bunker.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Neat.
So
Neato burrito.
We got a lot of cool Warhammer Fantasy and Blood Bowl. Oh, I mean, a lot of these podcasts in Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana area.
It's because the Midwest of the United States is perhaps the gaming capital of the universe.
Those members of that Game Preserve Gaming Group, man, they are the gaming elite. Ch-ch-ch. All right, so let's talk some Tomb Kings.
All right. Well, they're thin. They're bony. And they're full of baloney. They're the Tomb Kings. Thank you.
It is the musical episode. I don't know how it became the musical episode.
All right, well, how about first impressions, guys? I mean, obviously, they took a huge, huge, huge improvement to their army.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not a review, folks. We looked at the book. I sat there for about 2 hours scanning it, and thoughts.
I'll go on a limb. After reading through the book, I have to say that as cool as all the new toys are, especially the Necro and the Abyssal... The snake guys, whose names I...
Sepulchral Stalkers.
Stalkers and the Knights. I have to say, despite all of those cool new toys, the army I'm going to build is probably all the models I'm going to find in the army from before, just with better rules to fit them.
Yep.
The big difference is I'm going to be using some of the new characters to beef them up.
Gotcha.
Well, let me ask this. Is there, other than the... when you talk about, the Tomb Kings, it was this big bunch of skeletons that were enhanced magically. Is it still that?
But in the 7th edition, they weren't so much enhanced magically. They were just animated magically. They weren't very enhanced at all. They were pretty rough. I mean, in 7th edition, their big power was the fact that they caused fear, and that was their strength.
Right.
If that's why you paid 8 points a
model. Let me rephrase it then. Do we still have these guys moving twice, shooting twice?
Potentially.
Yes, no. Yeah, it's all or nothing. You've got one chance to cast that spell.
You guys don't mind if I start on
that
magic
phase? No,
it seems like a good place to start.
In fact, I practically memorized the magic deck.
In 7th edition, the Tomb Kings were defined by their magic phase.
Okay.
I mean, everyone can say, well, like, the movement phase was so important, but your magic phase was a movement phase.
Yeah.
In 7th edition, you spammed those spells, but you can't do that in 8th. You're going to cast it once. The difference is, rather than cast movement on this guy, then this guy, then this guy, you're going to cast it once, and it's going to hit everybody in a radius.
Yeah.
It either works or doesn't.
First of all, let's talk about their lore attribute.
Yep, go ahead.
They've got their signatures. They got 7 spells, the signature and the 6.
Mm-hmm.
Of those 7, 4 are augments, 2 hexes, and a magical vortex.
Correct, that's right.
The lore attribute, and if you cast an augment on your army, any unit that is affected by that augmentation gets to bring back D3+1 models back to that unit up to its starting size.
Brilliant mechanic.
Yeah, that's
so
nice.
Instead of having to cast... regrowing your units, if you augment them, they automatically regrow back some of those up to their starting size.
Up to starting size.
They can't
go
past it.
There's
no doing what the VC does and just starting with 20 and ending with 50.
In my opinion, which is likely wrong from some people's opinions, I always felt, though, the ability to have that way to bring back your troops was nice, but you'd never have time to use it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, you have other spells that are so important. 7th edition,
yeah.
You just couldn't you didn't get those spells out.
Yeah, I mean, you had to have your you had to have your two screaming skull catapults fired.
Now that you're limited because you use your it works like everybody else's magic phase.
You can blow up,
and well, plus you've got a limited number of dice.
Okay, so it's no longer freebie for the higher fan.
There are ways around the problem of rolling snake eyes. There are some combinations of units that will grant you additional dice in the way of the Banner of Sorcery a la High Elves, and there's ways of it granting additional.
Got this new model called the Necro Titan?
The Necro Titan, which sounds like sort of a magical variant on the Bone Giant.
It's a Bone Giant carrying a big chunk of a pyramid.
And basically... Cool. He has two bounce spells with him, and all friendly
Beastman
wizards within 12 inches of this dude get plus D3 to all their casting.
Yep.
Right.
Wow.
So automatically you've got this guy. He's a rare choice. You put him in your unit, and you keep your wizard within 12 inches of him, and automatically everything you cast gets plus D3. So that automatically is a great spell. Plus, once again... It's the first lore that the lore attribute is actually one of the old spells.
Yeah.
So just you don't have to worry about casting it. You just get it.
You get it every time it works. Now, the augments are... one gives you killing blow, and if you already have it, you get it on a 5.
Egad.
Yeah.
Tomb Guard.
What that means is you don't have to take Tomb Guard. You can take regular skeletons who are now Tomb Guard.
The signature spell is... And now they're
killing blow.
Yeah, but... There are other differences as well. Yeah.
There are most certainly other differences, but if you're willing to pay 4 points instead of, I don't know what it was, 12 points or more, they still have killing blow, the most important part.
Exactly. The signature spell is the movement spell, and it affects every unit within 12 inches of the caster.
That's right.
And you for, I think it's 9 or 7, whatever. You can pay double, and it's every unit within 24 inches.
Yeah.
Basically the table. Might be 18?
Or maybe 18.
I don't if it's 24, then it's... Well, yeah, it's not quite the table, but it's huge.
It's a big bubble.
It's
at 24 inches.
A unit can only be affected by it once per turn. So you can't have four guys and all take that as your signature spell and do it.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got the one is killing blow. The other one is you all get an extra attack during your combat phase or multiple shots.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get a second shot, but you get to fire twice. And because you still have that, what is it called, Chris?
The arrow of
arrows of Asaf.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The never take penalties to your shots.
Right.
There's no adjustment. What they have a ballistic skill of 2, but you hit on 5
all the time.
I remember reading through it, it does specifically say no bonuses or penalties.
Yes.
So you've got to go by your base. Yeah.
That's what I was saying.
Which is
skill.
Fine.
Fine. Fives.
That is fine.
Fives, and I'll roll about a zillion dice.
And if they have regular bows, if they're so cheap, they're 8 points for the archers. Maybe they're 6, but. If you can do that volley fire with multiple shots and you're hitting on 5s.
I think everything they have does volley fire in terms of... Because they've got all their stuff are bows except for the catapults.
Yeah.
The Ushtabi bows I don't think have volley fire.
But I think that they have a special rule that says they do.
Yes.
Oh.
The Ushtabi bows have volley fire.
Bear in mind, Brian, that we're talking about 50-some-odd points a model. If you can afford it, God help you, you know.
Yeah, I'm liking
how many,
that. I don't know.
How are you going to be able to afford?
Yeah, because the third rank is when you start counting volley fire because the first two can fire.
They're expensive. But that, I mean, to take 6 and just do multiple shots, that's 12 bolts coming in.
You're talking to somebody who owns 16 rat ogres.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but I don't think we're talking about the cost of purchasing them. I'm saying them in a unit.
And I've fielded them.
There you go. Well, go for it then.
Yeah, ridiculous.
So let's see. We got killing blow. We got extra attack, extra shot. There are the two other augments, and I can't think of what they were offhand.
They can all do the happy dance on a 5+.
They do the
dancing
happy
skeletons.
Doing the happy dance. Doing the happy dance.
Hold on, we can edit this. Give me 1 second.
What are you talking about? That was radio gold right there.
I'm gonna eat a cookie during this edit.
Nom 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 cookie.
Okay, the other augment is a 5-up ward save until the start of the next turn.
That sounds awesome.
Hooray, hooray.
Sure, on top of being a skeleton that you can bring back, I win the War of Attrition.
Yeah, you do. This is, wow.
Yeah, that's pretty fantastic.
Now, bear in mind that you're still looking at weapon skill, too. But that's going to change.
So
that's
someone had mentioned the multiple shots. I don't remember whether or not the spell had said... it's limited to units, correct? There's some particular units that can benefit from it, and there's others that can't.
I can't recall.
I don't recall that actually. But then again,
somebody was talking about, you know, oh my god, multiple shots on the Yoshabdibos, mm-hmm. you know, giant strength six.
I had heard something that they might not be able to as well. But
I think it's the wording on the spell that says, you know, skeleton bowman or something.
Oh well, I don't know.
So basically, those are your four spells. You got your signature spell, which is the
movement,
killing blow, extra attacks, and ward save.
Now the extra attacks, that's only for shots, right? That's not for weapon skill anymore.
No, they get an extra attack in close combat, or
so it's literally identical to the old 7th mm-hmm. edition, the spell of striking.
Yeah. Yeah,
multiple shot. It's well, and to use 8th edition parlance. It's multiple shot or extra attack
or
special
extra
rules.
Attack.
Yes.
Because, and that's one thing I really like about what they're doing, once again, to kind of go on about GW and their new book format, is that they are utilizing the special rules that are universal across the system.
Yeah, they're trying to universalize everything.
They're keeping the theme.
Exactly. And I praise them for that. I think that's one of the things that Privateer Press has done correctly.
I agree.
And also, Battlefront, Flames of War. Both those games, generally speaking, the special rules add a layer that can have cause exceptions in the inside of the primary mechanics. You get less squirrely crap that just is like, wait, how do these two special rules interact?
Yeah.
And you have no idea because two different writers wrote them 4 years apart
right.
from one
yep.
another.
Yeah.
Yep. Now the hex spells are both cool. One, you lose D3 to your movement until the start of the caster's next magic phase. But not only do you lose D3 to your movement, if you choose to move, all ground, including open ground, is dangerous terrain.
Dangerous terrain. Nasty.
Let's just talk about that for a second.
Yeah. That's terrifying.
You know what? How you like it now? Wait, how you like that wind spell now, horse boy?
That's right. Because, well, no, I mean, how are you going to get the wind spell?
No, my point is you kept doing that wind spell on my Chaos Warriors, and now you're going to get it on your
horse.
Grab
me a river there, Warrior of Chaos.
What? what did my Warriors of Chaos ever do to you?
And the other thing...
They chopped me into small bits a couple of times.
They didn't get a chance.
Hell cannon.
The other thing I like about this is almost every one of these spells, if I recall, I know at least half of them, you can increase, you can double the distance.
Yeah,
it costs like double the points. I mean, it's not like an extra three.
They're not exactly a cheap lore.
No. So the other one is you move to reduce the movement by D3 and everything's dangerous terrain.
That's the real key winner right there.
That one's scary.
Because it doesn't matter. You could double the movement, but everything's dangerous terrain, and some people are going to say, I'm just going to sit this one out.
Yep. That's a badass spell.
Yeah,
that is who you hit frenzied bottles with.
Yeah. Because then you just move right in front of
say,
fine,
charge me.
Well, and it's like, oh, okay, you hit my my skeletons that I might bring warp back more in.
Yeah,
you lost how many guys on the way in? That's all that matters.
Or you put your carrion out in some gross angle.
A spell like that is the equalizer to some of those power units that you see, especially in tournament settings, like the Witch Elves, like the Warriors of Chaos, like especially the ubiquitous Kornite Warriors of
Frenzy, blah,
the,
blah, blah.
The 40 blood letters.
Well, this is where they keep saying you can take... You have to take a wizard who has this lore. Like, you have to
The Hierophant must take Nahikaran lore.
Now, you can also take, is it Light
and
Death?
Light and Death.
Brilliant.
But I'm looking at this I'm looking at this going, I might want two wizards... doing this because this is so beautifully tailored for their army.
Secondary light magic is awesome.
I'm just saying
it's a little bit like the high elf high magic lore in that you're like, oh, there's all these great, I have all this great access to all the lores, but then you're like, yeah, but the high elf lore's got a lot of cool stuff.
I like the
light magic specific. You know? There's nothing more terrifying than undead that are faster than you.
No kidding.
Okay, yeah, that's true. What's the other hex? Let me see. The other hex was, okay, this one was the movement. Oh, the other one is -1 strength and -1 toughness to your opponents. That's the other hex on them.
Holy cow.
And you can boost that one to D3, which might...
Oh my gosh, man.
Screw you, Warriors of Chaos.
Elves and roll a 3 on their toughness. They die.
No. Is it to a minimum of 1?
It does say to a minimum of 1.
Yeah, okay. It's a minimum of 1 on all this stuff.
Most of those, remember that a hex spell generally doesn't kill anything.
You're speaking to a Chaos player. Or to a Skaven player.
Yeah, you cheat.
Hey, no.
Yeah. Hey, David.
Yeah, you're right.
You said that they also can have access to death magic.
Yes. Correct.
That has a really nutty, unless I don't understand how hexes work, but I believe that has a pretty cool synergy with that death spell that also lowers your strength and toughness by one.
Yes, it does.
You can double tap. You can double tap units.
Double tap that.
Negative four.
That'd be
I would actually recommend the death magic. That's basically character assassination.
Mm-hmm.
The characters are going to be... It cannot be overstated how important your characters are in a Tomb King's army.
Yeah,
they will define how strong you are. When you lose characters, you lose the game. Death magic is the antithesis of that army. So by taking out those characters who are going to threaten you...
It's kind of ironic.
Yeah, and this begins... you'll start to crumble and stuff like that when you lose them.
Oh, God.
And, I did look up because we read... I remember we were reading. How does that work? If they do lose combat... It's the same thing as demons. It's unstable. However much you lose.
Really? It's not just a direct crumble anymore.
They changed it.
It's in the Big Red Book now. Describes unstable as whatever you lost combat by, lose some models.
That many wounds. Well, many wounds distributed as shooting. So if you lose by... Well, which is great because
but
I know...
But the Tomb Kings have some protection against that.
They have some protection if you have
the BSB.
BSB, if you're within 12 inches, there's one less.
There's a couple other things.
Same as the VC, yeah.
But there are some that are called constructs, like the Bone Giant, for example, like the Necrosphinx, the Warsphinx, Ushabti.
They lose one less automatically.
Oh, cool.
So, like, in Ushabti...
I think it was, wasn't that? I mean, dude, we sat there for for 2 hours trying to memorize this for the show.
Ushabti are already considered to have that BSB next to them, to be a part of them. But if you actually do have it, it's two less. So if they lose by two, say, from a giant who rolls that result,
it's just a wash.
You know. Then they lose no wounds whatsoever.
That's cool.
When you combine that with the magic phase, the Tomb Kings could exhibit some real resilience.
That's excellent.
Did we miss a spell? You said they have the magic vortex.
They've got the vortex.
There is a vortex.
I don't think it's... I think it's probably the most friendly of all the vortexes, considering that none of them are friendly. This is probably the one that's the... This is almost the spell to skip.
I know it's another one where you have a small template, you roll the artillery dice and multiply it by something to move it.
It's like a strength hit, right?
Everything it goes over takes a strength 4 hit.
When you consider that currently the FAQs talk about how templates, all characters go to lookout, sir.
Yeah.
This spell is useless against them. What's it really doing? It's a strength 4 hit. It might hit a lot of guys. Maybe in practice I'm going to change my mind. But in theory, in my mind, I think this is the one to probably skip.
Yeah, except, once again, let's talk about the minus one or more
you
toughness.
Crank down their toughness, you could really kill a giant alleyway of dudes.
That's very true.
At strength 4.
I can't think of anything better.
But combos are harder to get in the magic phase. You basically have to hedge your bets on one spell to get
it
through.
It is true.
You can bump it to something. You can, stupid points, but you can bump it to the pie plate, too.
Okay. That makes a big difference, because now you're talking about the whole unit.
A pie plate of strength 4 could...
And
the theory of that is that you've just deleted a unit, or attempted to.
It moves around the board randomly after that. If it moves off the board, it's gone.
That's true.
And when you roll the direction dice, if you roll the bullseye, I think it just dissipates.
Yeah, there's nothing complicated about a big template that causes strength 4 hits.
I do like that it just does... It's that one wound type of thing. I like
it's the way it's a little more balanced. Magic vortexes are dangerous in that it's a scatter die to see how far it goes. And just like the lore of death, if you're casting Purple Sun and you roll a miscast, I play my Chaos Dwarves a lot, and they're casting it. My guy has got an initiative of one. If that thing lands on my head, I'm a dead dwarf.
Exactly.
Oh,
so
man,
and you don't really want that to happen to your Hierophant.
No, you really don't.
Yeah. No. I think it was when you roll the artillery dice. If you roll the hit on it or whatever it is, or the whatever it is,
center it right on.
Then it's on the guy. So whatever.
So dangerous, but
not nearly as bad on this one though.
But
no, it's only one hit, hopefully you can heal him.
We may have some of the details wrong on the spells. Like I said, it's what we were reading, but I knew that's what everyone was. I mean, that's what everyone was looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was reading it, I was just like, "Oh my god, this is so." I mean, it really works perfectly for that army.
Yeah.
They really got a perfect lore for them. The attribute works well. I mean, but then again, the big wah and the little wah attributes work well. I mean, they really, these are really well thought out decks.
But this fits, and it is exactly what the Tomb Kings needed. It's a shame in a way that it's no longer those automatically working bound spells the way that they used to feel, where spells were indomitable. There was no way to stop them all, but this feels right.
That wouldn't really necessarily work with this edition either.
I'm really glad they're trying to bring it in line with the core mechanics.
It's a shame that that's lost. It was something that was characterful, but again, we want to play this game. This is how we have to play it.
Yeah. I said it on the last episode before we saw the book. I said on the very last episode, I hope they don't change it. Now that I read it, I'm like, no, this works. I was wrong.
It's something I'd like to see come back in some form and in some future edition because I like the way it felt. It just doesn't work for this. I want to play this game. Here it is.
I will tell you what I don't miss.
What's that?
First, you got to do
the fact that they were the bottom of the pack.
No, first you got to do the bounce spell. Then you got to do it with this guy. Then you got to do it. Dude, that was always confusing to me. I never knew what the hell anything.
At the same time, if you were playing that army, we were just used to it.
Yeah, it was a fantastic way to start a fight during a tournament too. I just remember because people forget.
Can I go back and do my?
Well, you're right. Exactly.
But you know, if you're at a tournament level, you better know what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. But then again, I guess.
But you don't want to be a jerk either. Be like, nah, you missed it. Screw you.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Like, you're
exactly.
Like, you're
well, let's be honest here. Unless you're a Tomb King player, you're asking the Tomb King player, what's the order? What?
No, well, really, I can do it this way.
What's a Hierophant mean?
I'm just thinking of like a middling Tomb King player in 7th edition on round 4 of a tournament
middling
where everyone's
Tomb King players
tired.
Are going to be in the bottom tables.
Yeah. I'm just whatever. Anyway, splitting hairs. I think that the other thing that honestly is great, absolutely great about this change, is that in the 7th edition Magic, the Tomb King turn took forever.
Yeah.
And you would lose track of which shooting phase you were in. And I just remember the last couple times I played my good buddy Chris Grafton. He and I played a couple of games with his Tomb King, and it was a lot of fun. But even he was getting tired of it. He was like, yeah, I know, sorry. Let me do my second phase. And it was cool. It was what they did, but it did get really tiring after a while because his turns would take forever.
And repetitive and boring.
And repetitive.
It'd be, you do these three spells in the same order again.
And the thing was is that his point was, which was interesting, he's like, I'm sorry, this isn't just boring for you. This is kind of boring for me, too.
Yeah.
And I'm like, cool. Well, whatever. It's the way they run. So I'm not.
I think that new magic, the new style of 8th Ed Magic, you know, because of how miscasts work and Irresistible Force works and everything. You know, you hear people talk about their games and they talk about that. Oh, I miscasted on X turn.
Yeah.
You don't hear about I did 7 magic missiles over the course of this game. And the old Tomb King's magic, you never heard anybody say, I brought back an entire chariot every turn. It just didn't happen because no one cared. Because, your magic's going to work. Ooh. Now you get that. You know, I did the 24-inch bubble of everybody moved, everything, Irresistible Force. Awesome. You know, it went off without a hitch, and I demolished my opponent.
I loved hearing the, you know, there I was, and I was going after these guys, and I Irresistible Forced. It is like when people.
Yep.
I love hearing people say the Irresistible Force, and they're not happy about it.
It is simply one of my favorite changes to 8th.
I have to say, our good friend Chris Yu, who's been on the show several times.
I know Chris.
Yeah, of course you do. Of course, from
back in the
Cold Arms. That's right.
Yeah.
One of the things he likes to say is, and I agree with him completely, is that the magic phase has to be the most intense, stressful, unnerving part of the game. I mean, everyone is on eggshells. You're watching those dice at all moments.
I'm sitting here defending with less dice than you, knowing I've got to parcel these out really well, or else I'm going to get stomped.
Absolutely.
You're
wonderful.
Sitting there with you saying, okay, now I'm going. I know I can smash him, but if I smash him too hard, I'm going to smash myself in the process.
It's the magic. The 8th Ed Magic phase is why I wish, you know, and I know I'm kind of in the minority. I wish that they would not have done measure ranges. On all, the pre-measuring of ranges.
Okay, folks. Since the way the show recorded, the natural breaks in the show would wind up splitting it up into a 4-hour and a 2-hour segment either way. I'm trying to keep this into 2 even segments. So we're going to stop it here. It's sort of a shift in the topic a little bit, so it's sort of a natural break. Hopefully we've left you hanging enough with the Tomb Kings that you want to hear the rest of this conversation. The show, the second half of the show, should be up within the next 2 days. When we come back, we're going to finish off the Tomb Kings conversation. We're going to have a segment of the Phoenix Prince, where he's going to talk about his Skaven. And then we get into a really fantastic discussion on painting, modeling, basing, sculpting. I think whether you are a veteran painter and sculptor or just kind of new at it, I think there's something interesting here to be had for everybody. I hope you enjoyed the show. I know this isn't the normal ending, but the show's not over. So tune in, you know, keep checking your iTunes feed, and we'll see you back here for episode 23B. So thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.